Hey, everybody, it's Jason Calacanis sitting in for Leo Laporte on This Week in Tech. My guest today, Brian Alvey, Dave Matthews, and Peter Rojas. We talk about Amazon buying Whole Foods, Twitter, Facebook, and Trump, and all the exciting news out of E3. It's an amazing episode coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hey, everybody. We've got an amazing This Week in Tech for you. Episode number 619. It's June 18th, 2017. Honey, I Shrunk the Panel.
This Week in Tech is brought to you by Betterment, the largest independent online financial advisor. For one low, transparent fee, Betterment gives you personalized advice and invests your money. For a limited time, you can get up to 6 months managed free. Learn more at betterment.com/twit. And by WordPress, WordPress powers 27% of all the websites in the world. Get 15% off your new website at wordpress.com/twit. That's wordpress.com/twit. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect your business from ransomware and hacker attacks with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free at carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT to get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. And by NatureBox. Delicious snacks made from high-quality ingredients. Eat well and feel better. Visit naturebox.com/twit to save 50% on your first order.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of This Week in Tech. I am your guest host sitting in for Leo Laporte. I'm Jason Calacanis. You can follow me on the Twitter at Jason. To my right, the one, the only, my partner from Weblogs, Inc., and now the CEO of Clipisodes, Brian Alvey. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
To my left, the greatest gadget inventor of all time, who burned through over $100
million.
$205 million building the QCAT. Dave Matthews, the founder of New Air and the Gadget Guy. Dave, we're going to get into it, but when you did see Amazon release the wand, your vision for the QCAT, which you burned basically $200 million on.
The GNP of many countries.
And now you see Jeff Bezos release the 2.0 version, and Amazon becomes the most valuable company in the world. Did you sleep last week?
Barely. It was tossing and turning. All I could think about was ordering Whole Foods through my Alexa.
Exactly, and we'll get into it. Also with us to the left of Gadget Guy, Dave Matthews, the one, the only, Peter Rojas, founder of Gizmodo, Engadget, Gadget, and now a venture capitalist.
Yep.
He has sold out. Two of the four people at this table have sold out and are now making investments. Two still building companies. And here it is, everybody. If you are watching instead of listening, here it is, the QCAT. Of course, Leo Laporte has one of these in his museum of failed startups.
They had to unplug it from his laptop, actually.
They did.
We're still using it.
When you see it, do you still have PTSD? How many years of therapy does it take, Dave, to recover from a $200 million loss?
Let me tell you. A lot of people pay money for MBAs. I just do startups.
It's a $200 million amazing way to look at it. All right, well,
gave 300 other employees MBAs, too.
That's true. Well, what I love about you is that you take it in stride, and you're not bitter.
And you gave me points for it when we won launch with New Air.
So. I did. It definitely is something that you can be proud of. But it is one of those things, being ahead of the curve as a technologist.
Timing is everything.
Yep. We've seen it over and over again. But this week, there was huge news. We all woke up this week to find out that Jeff Bezos and Amazon had bought Whole Foods for over $13 billion. We were wondering if he was dabbling in retail. They opened a bookstore. They opened this very interesting, cashier-less store for their grocery store.
The Go Store, which uses cameras. You just grab things off the shelf.
Right.
So you don't need to scan barcodes even.
And people were wondering, hey, is this, you know, these stores, is he just experimenting or is this actually a takeover plan? Is this real business? Peter, when you saw this announcement, what did you think?
I mean, it was a bold move, right? Because, like you said, we've seen Amazon make these sort of tentative
steps into retail. And I think a lot of us thought that their plan would be to roll out, you know, these Amazon stores like the, you know, the bookstores and things like that, and start to do this in more at a slower pace.
I mean,
they've dived right in with Whole Foods. I think the speculation is that, and I tend to agree with, is that this gives them a big footprint for being able to do groceries, right, for doing the rollout, but also to be able to add logistics to all these very affluent neighborhoods.
It's like a last mile play in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because now they have hundreds of stores that are within, I don't know what percentage of the population lives within driving distance of a Whole Foods. Let's call it 30 miles.
I mean, there's 431 Whole Foods in the U.S. and abroad, and very few are overseas. So it's mainly in the U.S. But these are mainly in affluent neighborhoods, mm-hmm. Which reach out to rich customers.
Right.
But it's also valuable real estate in and of itself. And if they wanted to launch 431 logistics centers,
how long would that take? I mean,
it would take years and cost them.
If they launch two or three a month, it would take forever.
Yeah. So they're diving right in.
Brian, when you look at this and you see Instacart, which is extremely popular here in the Bay Area and a number of mm-hmm. other places, Instacart has a multi-year deal.
Right.
Instacart is loved, mm-hmm. and they seem to have figured something out. It was kind of terrible in the beginning. They got everything wrong. Over time, the shoppers have gotten better. Is this the end of Instacart? Is there any way Instacart comes out of this ahead in your mind?
No, absolutely. And it's because if you look at in Florida, right, Universal Studios had a deal with Marvel. They had Marvel's Islands of Adventure. Then Disney goes and buys Marvel.
Right.
But they can't put Marvel rides in Disney World.
Oh.
So you go to Disney World in Florida, and you can do everything but Avengers, Iron Man, superhero stuff. You have to go to Universal for that because they have a multi-year deal.
Right.
So that's a weird situation, right? But then it gives them the opportunity, Instacart, to go to everybody who isn't Amazon and Whole Foods and lock them all up.
Right.
So I think that lights a fire under everybody else to start working with Instacart, and it gives them a big out to be whatever. Let's say Amazon ends up, Whole Foods ends up 50% of the market. 50% of the rest, the other 50% is Instacart.
Yes, yeah, that was my hot take on it as well, which is I think Instacart just got twice as valuable.
Correct.
Now somebody has to buy them. Target,
Walmart,
obviously. What do you think, Dave?
So this is a classic all ships rise with the tide.
Yeah.
For a while, I was the in-house inventor at Radio Shack.
Right.
And there were some rumors that Amazon would use Radio Shack stores while they were going through bankruptcy as distribution centers.
Mm.
Now, if you think about what Whole Foods stores are like today, they're congested. They're packed with merchandise, packed with product. So I think this is only going to be part of Amazon's Fresh program.
Right.
Not going to have anything to do with any of the other supply chain stuff. So you'll still be looking forward to your drone sending your next package down.
Now, Radio Shack, it's interesting that you mentioned that. So you worked at Radio Shack. Was that also a company that you killed when you were there? Like, did you drive that one also
I left in 2004, so then.
They closed that. That's when
7,000 stores down to just hundreds now. So probably
are there still Radio Shack stores?
There's a handful.
Yeah. What do they do at Radio Shack stores
So they
now?
Sell Sprint phones now.
So basically, they're just a place to sell phones.
Well, you can still buy Radio Shack
stuff. Why didn't they make them into like Hackaday hacking makerspaces?
So we did that.
Wasn't that your plan?
So I was part of the editorial team on Make magazine as well. And I brought Make and Radio Shack together. But at that time, there were no kits. Arduino was just still lab stuff. And we finally got Maker kits inside the stores. But by then, it was too late.
This experiential retail seems to be the thing people want to do, and they just miss that timing again. Timing being everything.
A great example of a store you've probably been to, Peter, the Little Bit store in Manhattan.
I haven't been to it, but I know.
Explain to people what the Little Bit store is.
So Little Bits are magnetic computers that you stick the modules together, so sensors and Wi-Fi modules, and it's great for kids because, speaking of Father's Day, you can clip these together, and because of the polarity of the magnets, you can never put voltage in the wrong way. So they've created an experiential store in New York, so you can go in and you can essentially have birthday parties and field trips at this store and learn how to program very rudimentary.
So when you see the wand come out, we were joking before that the wand is – and I saw you were playing with it. So here it is, the first time I've actually ever held it. And it is – I mean, it is just unbelievable to hold your invention, the QCAT, and the wand here. When did you release the 1.0 of the QCAT?
So the QCAT you're looking at now is called a PS2 wedge.
Right.
And back in the day, there were PS2 connectors. We started inventing this in 1997. So 20 years ago, about to the day
when 20 years, and the device is essentially the same size, and the technology is, it's got a barcode reader on the top.
Yep, so this one uses a camera to read it. This one uses an optical sensor that's more like what the mouse would use. Mm-hmm. And when we invented this, the optical mouse wasn't even invented yet. So we had to create a lot of new technologies. Cloud computing wasn't around, so we literally bought Dell boxes and racked them up in server banks. We had to build our own cloud.
And obviously not wireless.
But we did have a wireless. We partnered with Cross. This has never been seen before. So
this is a pen, a wireless pen.
Cross pen. On one end is a pen. On the other end is a ruby-tipped roller scanner. And you can scan and hold.
A barcode. You just run across the barcode.
And then we also had the key fob as well. The key fob, again, a portable one. And what's really clever about these is they modulated their tips, the light, just like an IR protocol that was a modified protocol to send the data down.
Now, what is this device, the Amazon Wand, for? You were playing with it. What do you think is the use case?
Yeah, I put up an Instagram video. If you guys look at @GGDM, you can see the video of it working.
And then Gadget Amazon guy, has, Dave Matthews.
Yeah, exactly. So the button on it, and it's not connected to the Wi-Fi here, but it has a decent speaker in it, surprisingly. And you can push the button.
Order caviar, the most expensive you have. A double order, please. Thank you.
So, unfortunately for Jason, but fortunately for my bank account, that will not go through because there's no Wi-Fi connected to it. But that's essentially the use case.
Order 20 pounds of foie gras.
There it is.
Nice.
But the poor thing is people are listening to Twit right now.
I just said that
just
it'll
ordered
be
20 grams. Right. By the way, there's been a run on foie gras.
I've just been hacked because she said we'll restore the connection and then put the order through.
Fantastic.
So it does have the buffer.
When you go to the bathroom, we're going to order a ton of embarrassing products.
And then the scanner, the QCAT, you had to touch the optical surface. And this scanner you can use a few inches away. And Red Bean comes out. So it's $20, but it's subsidized with your first order with it. So it's essentially free, and it's sold out now immediately, of course, because it's net.
Peter, what does
free.
That cost to make, you think?
I think it costs very little at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, you can buy these Wi-Fi chipsets, and I don't think it requires very much to run.
Runs off two AAAs.
Yeah, to run Scala. And so I would say that they're probably break even on them. I think it probably cost them 15, 20 bucks. But they assume that they're going to sell enough extra stuff by having these people's homes that it's totally worth the loss.
Are you going to get one? And do you think that this is this combination of the wand and let's just call it Walmart Instacart? Because we'll assume that they'll keep the Instacart relationship. And in other markets where they don't have Instacart, they'll make their own, you know, Amazon Fresh delivery.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is going to be the standard for all homes in the United States within whatever reach of a city? Is that you'll never go to a grocery store unless you really want to?
Well, I mean, I think that as someone who's been an Instacart user since, I mean, it was first introduced in New York when I lived in New York, there is a convenience factor that is really hard to overlook, right, when you have something like this. There are definitely some things that you miss by not going to a grocery store. And in fact, grocers are actually starting to notice that it's actually hard to upsell you. When you have a list of things that you always order all the time. And then for a lot of new food brands.
But that's their problem, not ours.
It's not exactly. But
People Magazine's problem in the checkout line.
Yeah.
But you can imagine that if you are trying to introduce a new food brand right now, you have a real challenge because the end case was one of the ways that grocery stores tried to promote new products. And in fact,
when you say the end case, define what that is, the end
case. So the end of the aisle where companies are actually pay to rent that space to promote their new product, whatever it is.
Which is why sometimes you go to the grocery store and you'll see your coffee brand in the coffee aisle and also in the end cap.
Exactly.
For that opportunity.
And so it's a source of revenue that grocery stores will have to forego because it's less valuable real estate if people aren't coming in. If most of the people walking down your aisles are Instacart shoppers, it's not as valuable.
Brian, you live in the East Bay here in the Bay Area. Do you have Instacart?
No, I have a family and we load up the car and we bring it home. But there are buildings in San Francisco.
And by the way, we're sorry. I mean, in a way, like when you right. hear that he goes to the grocery store, do you feel pity for Brian? I literally feel bad for you. Like that you have to go there.
Gets me away from the pets.
Yeah, Costco used to be exciting.
I find it torturous to go.
Yeah.
Now Costco is the worst place on earth.
No, you pick your times. But in San Francisco, there are buildings that one of the selling points is they have a deal with Safeway. Well, while you're at work, you put in your order, and it's not even through an Instacart or an Amazon or anything like that. It's just whatever, you know, a Peapod or whatever thing Safeway is using or one of these grocery stores. And they will just come, and they have a key to your apartment. They will unload it all into your cabinets and into your refrigerator and your freezer.
Well, and actually, you'll see that apartment buildings are being designed to be able to take in groceries, right?
Right.
And they have special rooms that are, you know, right, cooled and things like that. Or they'll have the apartments designed with special, you know, containers just adjacent to the front door.
Right.
But also, because of Amazon, apartment buildings are just generally having to redesign their mail rooms, right, and things like that to accommodate
too many packages.
Too many
packages.
What's
new is old. And just like the Amazon wand is just like my 20-year-old invention, my apartment in San Francisco from 1929 had an ice box. It was a box that you would put ice in. And it had two doors, one door on the outside where the milkman would come,
yes,
right,
put the milk in and load it up with a cube of, you know, brick of ice. And then the other door was on the inside of the house to let me retrieve that milk.
And, you know, package security is actually, I mean, I'm on Nextdoor, and if half the posts are people complaining about their Amazon packages being stolen.
How do these people not have a Ring doorbell or a butterfly or a drop?
Well, it's funny because Ring is now one of the biggest advertisers on Nextdoor.
It is. It's interesting, yeah.
And I just had one installed last week.
You had a Ring doorbell.
Yeah, I mean, I had cameras before, but yeah. I figured it was just a lot simpler to have.
How many cameras does everybody here have in their homes right now, security cameras?
I have 8 or 9.
Yeah, well, I did Slingbox, so I would put cameras literally everywhere, like one on top of the Transamerica building, one on top of the Golden Gate Bridge toll pass through. So I have cameras scattered about.
Yeah, I'm not talking about your work for the CIA. I'm talking just strictly about your home. Just four. How many do you have, Brian?
My old house, 6. The new one, we haven't put them in yet.
I think I'm up to 6 or 7 now. Yeah. Like just everywhere on the property because the doors all have it. Does anybody here worry with all of these cameras and also obviously microphones about privacy and these things being hacked?
Well, that's the worst thing about the skeleton and the Google Home and the upcoming Apple terribly named,
which we'll go to after the break for sure.
Voice box. You literally have NSA front doors that are sitting in your living rooms, right? You're trusting that wake-up word means no data is being sent. But as soon as there's a compromise, all that data, all that voice data gets to go to the cloud.
Peter, what are the chances that Amazon Echoes or Google Homes have not been compromised right now by hackers and or governments? What are the chances they haven't been, those two platforms?
I think it's unlikely that either has been compromised. I think Amazon and Google have very strong network security.
Okay.
I think that if you have a random webcam that you purchase on Amazon from a Chinese OEM for $40.
Right.
I think that the
100%.
I would say that it's pretty strong. I'm not going to say it's 100%.
Okay.
But there's
100% chance it's capable of being hacked.
Absolutely. And I think that there's actually now a number of services. There are actually boxes you can now connect to your network at home, which will monitor the traffic from those devices and see are they, is there suddenly a lot of outbound traffic going to some random server in China?
Yeah. Brian, what are your thoughts on privacy vis-a-vis these new devices?
So Nikki and I disagreed about this at our old house, about inside versus outside cameras.
Right.
She was firmly against the inside ones. And I'm like, well, what about babysitters and nannies and stuff like that? Don't you want to know?
Right.
And she's like, I don't want to be spied on because the people who install them and then the people downstream from that and then the other, like, I just don't trust any of them. So we ended up with all outdoor cameras, nothing on the inside. And then every now and then we'd be like, damn, I wish we could roll back in that argument we were just having and show you what you said.
Oh, yeah. No, that
I have won arguments that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I don't think if...
So we don't have them. It's good.
Spousal discovery.
Right, exactly.
Like to roll back the argument. I don't think that's a productive thing here.
It's
as
not,
we
so
celebrate
we don't have
Father's
We're still together.
Yeah. All right, when we get back from this very brief pause for the cause, we're going to talk about Apple's new Siri device and if anybody here is going to pay $3,850 or whatever insane price they're
$349.
I'm sorry, only $349 for a device that's $50 or $99 from everybody else. We get back on Twitter.
More with This Week in Tech coming up in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsor, the largest independent online financial advisor, Betterment. Betterment serves one purpose, to help you make the most of your money. You got to save. I know I'm talking to some of you pretty young. I was telling my daughter this the other day. She's 25. I wish I'd started saving when I was 25, because what I have now would be worth twice as much with just 10 extra years saving at the beginning. Start now to build your nest egg, whether it's for retirement, college savings, to buy a home. We've all got long-term savings, and Betterment is the better way to save it, to invest it. They take proven investment strategies that have been around for decades, and then they use technology to deliver them to, they now have more than 250,000 customers, because it works. Based on your financial planning needs, you will get the thing that's different about Betterment. You get advice from humans, personalized advice for retirement planning, building wealth, your financial goals, whatever they may be. But they also use computers to invest your money. And computers can do a really great job
because they monitor your investments more closely. They rebalance all the time. They can help you lower taxes with tax loss harvesting. On the average, Betterment's tax-coordinated portfolio can increase portfolio value by as much as 15% over 30 years. That's what I mean. The sooner you start, and the sooner you start doing it with Betterment, the better. Plus, Betterment gives you a clear view of your net worth at all times because you can sync your outside accounts, your bank accounts, your other investments. So you don't just know how your Betterment's investments are doing. You know how your whole net worth is. Another reason to choose Betterment, the fees are low and transparent. You always know what you're paying. Only 0.25% on assets under management. 0.25%. With an option to upgrade to 0.40% to 0.50% for access to a certified financial planner or licensed financial expert. That is really a good deal. If you want to talk to someone about your specific financial situation, you can always access their team of licensed financial experts. Betterment cares about keeping your money and your data secure. They have advanced data encryption, login protection. They do it right. You just got to trust me on this one, but they do. They know what they're doing. Betterment.com. Now, of course, investment involves risk. I got to tell you the truth. But if you do it right, you can minimize the risk and maximize your returns. For a limited time, get up to 6 months managed free. For more information, visit betterment.com/twit. That's betterment.com/twit. Betterment. Rethink what your money can do.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to This Week in Tech. I am your guest host, Jason Calacanis. And you can buy my book on Amazon, Superplug, Angel. Go buy the book. They paid me a ton of money to write it, and I'm just totally scared they're not going to sell enough. And Brian, you helped me.
I did.
You were my writing coach when we wrote it. Thank
Still
you.
Is.
And
is it like an MBA in paper?
It's basically like an MBA. Yeah. It's an MBA. Cool. It's how to make money angel investing. And
one 1/10,000th the cost of your MBA. MBA, I think.
Pretty much. I think it's $20 versus $200 million.
Perfect.
Hey, Apple released. Oh, thanks for the plug.
That's
guys.
Very pretty.
AngelTheBook.com. Apple released finally a at home.
Smart speaker.
We call them smart speakers now?
Yeah,
is that the category?
That's what we're
calling them. Category name. Smart speakers.
Not sure what else to call them.
Voice digital assistant?
I wanted to call them cloud speakers because they're connected to the cloud.
I like cloud speaker.
Never
Let's go with cloud speaker.
Okay.
Okay, we're gonna make
ambient
cloud
computing device with high-end audio.
No. I mean, listen, you're the guy who named
it. It just rolls off the tongue.
Okay? Instead of calling it a wand, you called it a QCAT.
You already had a mouse.
Technology, you're great at branding. Let's leave it to Peter Rojas, okay? He came up with the name Gizmodo and Gadget as well.
That is true.
So Apple, which was ahead of everybody with Siri,
mm-hmm.
finally announces at the WWDC that they're going to have a speaker that you can talk to with Siri. Why did it take them so long, Peter? And why does Siri seem to me to be so far behind? It just doesn't seem to work as well. Am I right? Because when using them, when I use my iPhone, I feel like Siri is constantly just sending me to the web, and it just kind of answers my questions. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So they acquired Siri. Mm-hmm. It was an acquisition. So right. That team came in via acquisition.
Right.
It was a product that was earlier along, mm-hmm. And Amazon continued to invest in their voice-based assistants and their AI behind that was powering it, and their speech recognition and all this.
Amazon did.
Apple became, I think, a little bit complacent. And then at the same time, Google recognized that this was going to be an important area and has invested a tremendous amount of resources, buying talent, making strategic investments, strategic acquisitions of other companies, things like that. I think Apple has a lot of stuff going on, and I think that Siri kind of fell by the wayside. And now they're starting to catch up. Now with the HomePod, it's not going to come out until later this year.
HomePod.
Yep.
Terrible name.
It's a terrible name.
Steve Jobs would not have let this go through, just like the iPad 3.
He
let iPad go through, though. I mean, you can't say he wouldn't let it go through.
No, right? iPad's a great name.
People hate it.
No, the iPad 3. We were talking about, in shows past, the hardware of the iPad 3 was terrible hardware
right.
that Steve would have never let ship.
Right.
I don't think he would have let them name this as well.
He would have said, who came up with that name? And then he would have said, who wants that person's job? That, I mean, it's sort of what he did with, like, what was the... What was their iCloud before iCloud? It was Mobile Me.
Yeah.
Mobile Me. And he's like, oh, how is Mobile Me supposed to work? And they explain. He goes, why the F doesn't it work like that? Fired everybody. It's like, why isn't that in the movie? That's got to be in the Steve Jobs 2.0 movie.
Yeah.
But why is it so expensive? That's the other thing I don't understand. Okay, so, I mean, I know Apple has a premium, but this seems wildly disproportionately priced compared to Amazon.
It's a higher quality speaker than you're going to get from the Echo or from the Google Home, right? So it's bigger and has...
Better than a Sonos?
So the press was there listening to the Sonos Play 3 and the Amazon Echo. And Echo sounded like a AM radio.
Sure.
And the Apple speaker, there's a 4-inch driver mounted centrally for bass.
Okay.
And then 7 tweeters around it.
Okay.
And then it listens to its own heartbeat. So it tunes to the space.
Ah, so you mean if the sound behind it, if it's on a bookshelf, if it hits the wall, it knows don't send so much sound that way.
Yeah. That's right. And Sonos actually has that as well, but you have to run that yourself.
You have to walk around the room with your app on,
yeah.
and it will listen to you, and you go to every corner.
I did that, and I was like, I don't have the time for this. Does it really make that big of a difference?
I didn't notice much of a difference.
I did it once, and I did it because it told me to.
Yeah, there's been Onkyo receivers and receivers for many, many years that would put a microphone in the middle of your room, and it would tune your home theater. So it does make sense, but what I found with the TruePlay, it's not only the pain in the ass factor, but...
TruePlay is the Sonos standard.
TruePlay is from Sonos, and these are all licensed technologies that companies have been working on in the sound space for years.
Right.
But I actually found I lost bass that I had before, so I don't use TruePlay for that matter.
So the reason it's so much more expensive is that it's really beautiful.
Beautiful, and they have the M8 chip in it, which
the
is
mobile the, 8 chip.
The app, same chip that runs the iPhone 6.
That costs serious bank. So it's basically an iPhone inside there.
Yeah. So it's just like the Apple TV. The latest generation Apple TV is essentially an iPhone as well with memory and processing power.
I mean, I think that they will have a cheaper version down the line. Yeah. I think that they want to position this first as... I think they want to set expectations around what it's going to be.
For audio files, is there expectation?
And I think it's actually one of the mistakes that they made with Siri was that when they introduced Siri, they positioned it as this sort of all-knowing HAL-like assistant that could answer your queries. And it turns out it wasn't that.
Right.
It was actually really good at a very narrow set of tasks. Mm. And so I think with the HomePod, what they're trying to do is position it as an audio, something for playing music first.
Right. So that's a Sonos killer in their mind.
Yeah, the position is a Sonos killer. And Sonos is worried, as they should be.
Right.
And
they knew this was coming at some point.
Yeah, and I think that the stuff that Apple's done around AirPlay in the past sort of hinted that something like this was in the works.
Yeah.
But
they also seem to play nice with Sonos in that they let Sonos be in the store. Right? You used to be able to buy a Sonos in the store. So now that this is out, is there a policy to kick Sonos out of the store?
I don't think
so. That's happened with some products.
It has happened here and there, but
it's never on day one.
Yeah,
but it happens.
Ah,
I think there was like the spat with I think Fitbits were originally sold in the store at some point.
And even then no more watches. See, they were the Fitbits were in there. Yeah. Or no, the Up was in there. Maybe.
Yes, that's right. It was the
Jawbone.
And then Fire TV, Amazon had a battle with Apple, and now. At the latest announcement, they said that you can now watch Amazon Video on Apple TVs now.
This is interesting, too, because I talked to somebody from... How do I say this without... I talked to an interested party, is how I'll say it. I talked to an interested party, and they said that Apple was demanding that Amazon pay them to put them on the Apple TV. And Amazon said, we're not going to pay you for the privilege of being on there, and they held their ground. Do you think people are paying to be on the Apple TV? Because people do pay to be in the stores essentially by having to give a massive margin to Apple. That's what people don't know. Apple negotiates with each of those people and makes them pay a very high margin, is my understanding. Is that your understanding as well?
So, it depends. I mean, I'm sure that Apple and HBO, for example, have some sort of arrangement that gives Apple a slice of maybe that recurring revenue. For subscriptions that are generated from an Apple
device.
Maybe
they get a bounty or something.
Yeah, so that wouldn't surprise me. I had heard something similar around Amazon, holding firm and refusing to pay.
Right.
It's certainly, there's not a good model, it doesn't establish a good precedent for Amazon.
It was dumb, I think, Brian, because when I had the Apple TV and I have Amazon Prime, and all of a sudden Amazon Prime starts having Transparent and some other good shows, Netflix is Orange is the New Black, but Transparent was on Amazon.
Uh-huh.
And there was some good stuff on Amazon, and I was like, okay, now I'm going to go use my Samsung Smart Hub, which is built in. And then I was thinking about getting the Roku, and I found myself looking at the Samsung Smart Hub, and my family now, they don't turn on the Apple TV. They use the Samsung one because they just got used to it, and it's good enough.
The same thing with my LG, right? I think that's actually one of the challenges for a lot of these connected devices, right, is that all of them have the same services on them at some point. They all kind of converge. And so if you don't play, if Apple TV, if Apple blocks popular services from being on their device, it actually makes people not want to use it.
Yeah. They can overplay their hand.
Yeah.
And if you're asking customers to change inputs on their TV, forget about it. It's game over.
Yeah, we already did that just with the Apple TV. But it gets really complicated because we find we're paying for Showtime three different ways. We're paying through the Comcast cable we have. We're paying for Showtime because we needed it at one point for something we wanted to watch. And then I think if you buy Hulu every month separately. So this a la carte stuff just kind of...
It's getting really confusing.
It gets out of control and really complicated because I think we're paying for... I love Showtime.
You know, I'm a cord cutter and we have Hulu Premium. I have YouTube Red. I have YouTube TV. I have DirecTV over the top. DirecTV Now.
Yeah, Netflix, just stopped paying for HBO Go.
So I have six services.
Right.
So you're back up to your $200 with the cable company.
I think I'm at $100 and change,
Nice.
And the DirecTV was costing me $200 a month to have all the channels.
It's a lot of TV.
And then how much buffering do you get? Right, DirecTV, generally you'd get only rain fade and buffering effectively through rain fade. But now I have DirecTV Now, and I'll be watching a show, and that box pinwheel will show up. And
People take pictures of that, and they put it on Twitter, and they offer to sell you a print of, like, here's my... And it's gorgeous, these patterns, but it's not the show you wanted to watch.
Hey, speaking of Amazon, which, you know, I think that this M&A trend that we're seeing, mergers and acquisition, is, in my mind, just the beginning. I think we're entering an era of big M&A that we haven't seen since Time Warner AOL. And I think these are going to start becoming not just $10 billion acquisitions, but I think we're starting to see some... maybe $25, $50 billion acquisition, maybe even $100 billion acquisition, as companies like Amazon start to and Apple start to trend towards a $1 trillion valuation. One of those rumors is that Amazon wants to buy Slack for $9 billion, and that Slack is going to raise $500 million at $5
billion. Yeah.
And that's on the table. That seems very likely to me. And that Slack is at a $1 billion run rate now. A $1 billion run rate.
Why? It's still not profitable.
Unprofitable $1 billion run rate. Correct.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, who's uninstalling Slack? Once you have it integrated, it's impossible to rip out with all the connections.
That's the beauty of enterprise SaaS businesses, right? It's, once you get in there, it's really hard to switch.
You have all these, and Slack specifically has that massive integration suite where people are putting their Trello or their, you know, schedule.
Your new inbox, right?
It's a new inbox. There's so many things connected. Why does Amazon, if they are in fact interested, and it seems like this is where there's smoke, there's fire, Peter, why do they want Slack? Because they don't do enterprise computing. Why would they do this?
It's actually, first of all, they have AWS, right? So they have a very strong tie-in to enterprise.
But that's for developers.
Well,
and this is a rank and file.
But they also have Chime, which is
Slack is for developers,
which is video conferencing, enterprise-focused video conferencing. They also have an email service for enterprise, which people are not aware of.
Yes. And like a MailChimp SendGrid competitor.
Right. No, but they actually have like a Outlook type competitor.
Really? I had no idea.
And so, unless I'm completely making that up.
So they think
there is an enterprise, a kind of stealth enterprise strategy at Amazon where they feel like they need to be competitive. They need to have a service offering, in this area. And so Amazon views everyone as its competitor. Apple, Google, Microsoft, Netflix, everyone is their competitor. And so it is insane. But if you're Jeff Bezos, you see that you don't want to have any point of weakness in your company, which is a little crazy. It is crazy. But if you think of it from his perspective,
maniacal.
It's that since everyone is a competitor, he has to basically play offense with every single market.
Brian, why do you think they would spend $9 billion on this?
Because they're going to be the everything store. They are the everything store. So I look at the companies. They are, I think, fourth or fifth in terms of Microsoft, Apple, Google, right, in terms of the race to a trillion. Apple is $730 million.
No, Amazon is the top now.
Amazon's really
the top? Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Highest market cap company right now.
Really?
They are at 980.
Oh, there we go. Okay, good. So I was looking
at their market cap is 466 right now. Amazon's is 466.
Right. 466 billion.
Right. And Apple.
Apple is 730, I think.
Yeah. And by the way, it's Amazon Workmail.
Oh, nice.
You're right. Amazon 730.
That's their Outlook competitor.
Yeah, Amazon's ahead because they have all that cash. If you, the discussion is if you take Apple's cash out.
Sure. then they drop.
I think they would be behind them.
But in terms of the race to technically be a $1 trillion company,
right.
they're, you know, fourth, fifth on the list,
yeah.
But they're on their way. But I think they could be the first one to get there if
right.
Apple's
Why?
Only because there's sort of nothing they can't do. So you look at something like Facebook's in the mix there. They're
right.
number four out of the five.
Yeah.
And you say, could Google build a Facebook killer? And no, they tried with Google Plus. Could mm-hmm. Apple build a Facebook killer? Can they do social software? Can they do things? No, they've tried that. They failed. Could Amazon? And you just got to stop and go, I don't know. Like, they have a lot of parts. They have a lot of things that maybe they could, right? There's nothing that you look at and say, could Amazon do this? And you can be certain and say, no, they can't do that. So I think they can kind of do anything. I don't think Apple
can do anything. Also has that massive iPhone franchise, which to me feels like it's reaching the peak. And iPhone 8, you know, iPhone 7 was slightly better. iPhone 8, it'll be slightly better. But they really haven't established a huge second money printing machine. Is that a risk factor, you think, Dave?
So the Apple TV was supposed to be this, right?
And the watch.
The watch, yeah. So that's true. But for
VR goggles?
So
they
AR.
They'll do AR
kit will be interesting. They didn't talk about hardware for it, but they did have the Oculus plugged into an iMac, and they have the multi-core, 16-core iMac that was announced.
The iMac Pro.
iMac Pro.
Yep.
This, to me, seems like the stupidest misread of their most passionate users. The most passionate users are going crazy that they can't put in the latest NVIDIA card and swap out RAM easily. So what do? Instead of giving them an iMac tower, like literally you could give those super fans the iMac tower that was two towers ago with just the new hardware in it.
Yep.
Instead of doing that, they make an iMac that's $5,000 where you can't change anything? I mean, what a horrible investment.
Everything's soldered on. But they say that no one is building computers anymore. And remember, the last computer they innovated with looked like a trash can. That was the
right.
Pro.
That was it was beautiful, but it was a mistake because you couldn't swap the stuff out.
Yep.
Peter, why did they make the iMac Pro? Are they clueless to what their super fans want, the creatives? Because I'm hearing creatives now want to move on and are buying Windows machines for this reason. And if software is all cloud-based, what's the difference between using, you know, Premiere or Photoshop or whatever you use as a creative on Mac or PC? I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I think for now, having a local GPU makes a big difference for a lot of that stuff. I think we're
My point is the Mac version any different from the Windows version? And could you move over pretty easily?
Well, I think that some developers are moving over and finding that for the things they want to do, having the flexibility to put in a 1080 Ti or something like that into their machine makes
the new NVIDIA card,
yeah, which is
ridiculous.
Amazing.
Is that $2,000 that Ti card?
It's $700. I paid $700 for mine. It's amazing.
Yeah,
worth every penny. And
what does it allow you to do? Just the resolution and the frame rate and everything.
So I can run The Witcher 3 at 4K. It's like one of the high end, you know, games at 4K resolution, 60 frames per second.
So it just looks ridiculous.
It looks amazing.
And you can swap out your monitor whenever you want. Right? So you can disconnect the investment in the monitor from the investment in the computer.
Well, yeah, that's exactly. I mean, that's when I built my own PC because I wanted something for VR, right?
Right.
And so, building, you're going to always pay less than buying.
What's the premium now? It's literally double to buy a Mac, right? For $5,000, what you get from the iMac Pro for $5,000.
They marketed it, though, as you were.
What would it cost?
You're saving because the screen's built in.
Yeah.
Instead of $1,000 delta.
I mean, I would say that if you were going to go and buy a super high quality 5K display, which is what the iMac Pro comes with, you're probably, I mean, that would probably cost, what, $1,000, $1,500 on its own?
Yeah, I have the LG. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
The white screen.
How much
one.
Was that?
I think it's $600 or $700.
The 5K one?
No, I don't have the 5K one.
So the 5K, I think, is like still like $1,000 or something. Yeah. I'd have to double check.
So you spent $3,000 plus $1,000, so it's only $1,000 more to get the iMac.
But I do think that there is a certain class of developer which is that wants they need something that feels future proofed in the sense that like okay next year when NVIDIA comes out with a new card I can just swap in the next one and that certainly I would never consider buying a high end machine that I couldn't swap out new components when they're available.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the chances of these AR glasses, Brian. I know you have Oculus and Vive, right?
Just the Vive.
Just the Vive.
Mm-hmm.
Kids love it.
Yep.
What do you think the chances are Apple comes out with these VR, the AR glasses in the next year or two? Because they came out with the AR kit, right? And people are doing iPad videos now, right?
No, no. So to enable the software, let people get in there, let them start building the apps, and then, you know, announce it all with the hardware. I think they have to do it. I think so. Listening to everybody here talk
this
about
year?
The Apple products? No, not this year.
Not this year.
No, I don't think they're anywhere near it. I think if they tease the software but don't tell you about a product, like they tell you about the speaker, then it's not coming anytime soon. So I think it's on their roadmap. I think that could be a great thing for them by the time VR is hitting there in it or AR is hitting there in it. But I was just listing out different products. I'm just not – I have an Apple laptop. I don't want to upgrade it. I would seriously consider Windows or some other.
I just got the Surface. It's incredible.
You know, I was lumping in the HomePod with Siri, which is just not exciting, right? Mm-hmm. You have to train Siri to do things. You have to really think through, what am I going to tell Siri to send an email or a text right now? I've never had to feel like that with an Alexa. And I just lump it in with Maps and the Watch. Just like not exciting products. Not really well done products. And so so the AR, maybe that's the thing that comes out next where you say, okay, they didn't do a TV, they didn't do a car, they didn't do this. Maybe AR is going to be the next big thing. So I'm excited for them. But, you know, I'm holding my breath. We'll wait. We'll see.
Yeah, they're nowhere near what Microsoft's doing with HoloLens.
Correct.
So. Yeah.
Right.
The HoloLens product.
Facebook or whatever. You know, like pick a company. Right?
When is the HoloLens going to become a consumer product? Because they're on the – are they on the second developer kit or just still the first?
They're on the first. They killed the second one. And
they
now
killed the second one?
Yeah.
Does that mean they're going to skip right to –
they're
going to
skip a generation and go – well, not necessarily. They're still focused on the enterprise component, the enterprise market for this. And I think for Microsoft, it actually makes a lot of sense because they haven't – I think they're conceding that maybe they're not going to win on consumer because they don't have mobile,
right?
Or any, you know, not anymore.
And what's the enterprise AR play?
There's tons. I mean, let's
take me through the top three.
There's industrial, right? Which is you work in a factory or you're doing repairs or something like that. You can actually have a schematic of the thing you're working on right in front
fixing
of you.
The engine,
and it can walk you step by step exactly. Right. You know, go to tweak this and can actually, you know, in real time tell you you need to turn that another quarter turn.
Don't cross those wires.
Don't cross the wires, yeah.
Yeah, you can do that.
So that's one. I think medical is another. They actually are, you know, surgeons are starting to use AR to be able to, if they're doing, you know, laparoscopy and sort of surgery inside the body, to be able to actually have a better idea of what they're actually doing. And then I think anything related to building, architecture, being able to, you know, walk into a building site and be able to see exactly.
So construction or even interior decorating, you put these on and sort of see what you're supposed to do.
So I think
painter or the carpenter.
Yeah, and so I think those are three of the, or if let's say you need to repair a building, you can walk around and see, okay, what's behind those walls.
It'd be fascinating when you think about surgery. If you were a medic in the field or you were in some, you know, region that didn't have a hospital close to you and somebody needs to have their appendix taken out, a local doctor who's never done it could put these glasses on, and if they know how to use basic surgical techniques, they could literally walk through an obscure thing. Or like Alien Covenant, where she gives herself...
Sure. No, I think...
Takes
I think
out the...
I think you're an optimist. I think there's... Think of your Uber driver, the ones that like know where the hell they're going, and the ones that have their nose in the GPS, and they like don't know where they're going, and circle the block a few times, right? Don't do the GPS, right? I don't want one of those ones doing my surgery. I want one of these. So... You know, we'll see.
But your choice might be, you know, the HoloLens assisted surgeon or
denying. Oh no, death. Right, of course.
Yes, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert. in Aliens, spoiler alert, the aliens win. I mean, what? I think the aliens kill the humans. Spoiler alert. Small.
They had better AR headsets, so.
Mm. I even saw a PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, AR embodiment as well. So it doesn't even have to be medical invasive. It could be medical mental as well, which is really cool.
All right. When we get back from this commercial break, let's talk a little bit about Twitter's new redesign and if anybody cares, as well as the fact that they took my feature, my Snowflake feature, and they've incorporated it into Twitter. More on the Snowflake Twitter feature when we get back on This Week in Tech.
Yeah, I'm really we'll be back with the Twit show in just a minute, but I had to come back and tell you about my vacation. Actually, no. Leo Laporte here. It's not about my vacation, but I am really thrilled that before I left on vacation, I got my WordPress.com blog going, and I'm posting pictures there. I've got a sway up there that I've embedded. I love WordPress. I forgot how much I love WordPress. I started blogging in the early 2000s and went to WordPress pretty much at the beginning. Before WordPress, you know, I mean, when it was just getting started, I hosted it myself for years, almost a decade. So I know WordPress inside and out. And then now I'm on WordPress.com, which I have to say is fantastic because they host it for you. They do all the updates, all the security. They've got two-factor. They have HTTPS, so your secure website, all the plugins, an amazing range of templates. And when I hosted it myself, I was the support guy. Now, on WordPress.com, I've got these great, what do they call them, happiness experts or something, delight. These great support people are so helpful, and they're fast. I get my, if I have a question, I said, I'm looking for a slideshow on the front, and within like an hour, I got a great answer. I'm using the 2017 template, and I just love it. You're going to love it. If you haven't set up a WordPress site in a while, try it. WordPress.com. If you don't have a website, get going. Today, everybody, not just every business. Of course, every business, it's like not having a phone if you don't have a website. That's before I use a business, I will look at their website. But if you're an individual, remember, if you don't put yourself out on the web, then other people control your reputation. You know, if you don't post anything, then whatever anybody else posts about you, that becomes fact. So even I tell teenagers this, you need a website. Put your best stuff up there. Put your best pictures, your essays, your awards. And, you know, pretty soon it's a lot of fun. WordPress.com makes it easy. And WordPress.com has a community. I mean, I have 500,000 followers now. Thank you, WordPress.com. And they, every time I post something new, they hear about it. I've never had so much engagement on my blog. I kind of slowed down on blogging, as you probably know. But I'm getting all this encouragement now. I'm blogging a lot more. I love it. Find out why WordPress powers 27% of all the websites in the world. More websites run on WordPress than any other platform. And do it the easy way at WordPress.com. Get started today. 15% off any new plan purchase. I've got plans for everyone. Go to WordPress.com/twit, create your website, find the membership plan that's right for you, and save 15% on your new plan purchase. WordPress.com/twit. I love you, WordPress. Oh, by the way, my blog, go check it out. I've got some pictures up there, leolaporte.com and WordPress.com/twit for 15% off your brand new website. Thank you, WordPress. Now, on we go with the show.
Thank you, WordPress. Thanks, Matt Mullenweg, for making an incredible CMS, content management system. I use it for calacanis.com. Hey, Twitter redesigned this week, and it looks fresh, it looks clean, but not much has changed. Does anybody care? Did anybody notice anything different?
I was telling my kids about it in the car. I was explaining people's frustrations with Twitter, right, because they know I use Twitter. And I said, if you ask everybody, what are the two top things you want to fix on Twitter? Like, number one, harassment. Number two is, like, edit my tweets.
Hmm.
And so every single time they come up with a new feature or redesign or something, everybody's like, thanks. I want my tweets edited, and you give me this, right? I want my harassment gone.
And the redesign's on the web page, not the mobile app.
No, mobile app. It's
a bit. The iPhone mobile app now looks more like the Android one, so they've standardized it a bit. They've cleaned it up across all of them. They still actually, I'll tell you the weird thing, is the lists are out of order. So I constantly add people to, like, private lists of stuff I'm looking at. And it's in a different order on the desktop than it is on the iPhone.
But you can get to the iPhone quicker. You slide to the left, list is right there.
Correct. No,
so it takes two clicks instead of like seven clicks.
So when I explain to them how frustrating Twitter is to the users, my middle kid, he goes, oh, this is just like Pokemon Go. Every single thing we ask them to do, they don't do. They take years. And then they give you a thing and it wasn't what you wanted. And then they cut off all the third-party apps that show you where all the Pokemon are. I was like, my God, that is Twitter. That's exactly what Twitter did. So that's their Twitter is Pokemon Go.
Peter, you use Twitter every day.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Make any difference to you? You care?
I went back to Tweetbot. Right. I mean, I use Tweetbot.
What do you like better about Tweetbot?
It feels slightly more power user, I guess.
Any specific feature you love?
So I think that I just find the UI to be more intuitive and less kind of cluttered.
Should Twitter open up and just
with the new UI, it's not...
do whatever they want. It wasn't that the strength of Twitter is that they kind of just let people, you know, 1,000 different flowers bloom.
So there is a path not taken, right? Twitter, they hit a crossroads. This was maybe like 7 years ago where they had a path, which is either to be essentially a metered API business or an advertising driven business. And if they were going to be an ad driven business, they had to kill the third party developer ecosystem
because
so they could control the, where all the ads are served.
Right.
With all these third-party clients, like TweetDeck.
Yeah.
And remember, there was a company that was going to acquire, that was acquiring all these third-party clients.
Right.
And they had an offer to buy TweetDeck. Twitter realized, because TweetDeck had so much of this traffic, that they couldn't do this. And actually, the plan for this other company, which I can't remember what it is right now, it's one of the guys from Idealab, Bill Gross's company,
right,
one of his companies. They were going to basically take all these third-party clients and then introduce their own
ad network.
No. Twitter-like protocol, because Twitter was going down all the time,
right,
and they were going to introduce it as, here's a backup protocol, so when Twitter goes down, you can still get your messages. Amazing. As long as you're on one of these clients.
Right.
And then eventually they were going to try to wean people away
right.
from Twitter entirely.
Mm.
It was kind of gangster, like how they were trying to like...
Didn't work.
Didn't work, because...
Is there room for somebody to create a Twitter 2.0 since Twitter can't seem to get out of their way?
No.
Why not?
You know, I think that people are too entrenched. It's,
okay.
Are you on Mastodon, right?
Right.
I created an account. I didn't set up my own instance, but if people aren't familiar with Mastodon, but it's essentially like an open source federated version of Twitter where everybody can set up their own server.
Right.
And
sort of like having Minecraft servers or...
Or email, frankly.
Or BitTorrent or whatever.
It's an open standard.
Yeah.
Nobody can control it. And the different instances, you know, they can decide their own rules for what they accept in terms of speech and federating to other other instances. And... It's gotten a little bit of traction. I think it maybe has like 400,000 or 500,000 users, but it isn't growing that quickly. But it has some of the nice things about early days of Twitter. It's very open. Developers can create their own experiences around it and things like that.
I would love to see somebody create a B corporation, which is a benefit corporation, not quite a nonprofit, but not a marauding company, to create literally a clone of Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Literal clones. That were that had ads to support them, but that were made to be privacy first and consumer first, right? And literally just copy Facebook, because Facebook has no problem copying everybody else, right?
It sounds like a job for Rocket Internet.
Well, yeah, they're the original photocopiers, but I'm just more for people who want to have control of their data over time and maybe not have an ad-based experience. Basically, if Apple had their own social network, what would it be like? They wouldn't be
probably barely usable. But
what's that?
Barely usable, probably.
Barely usable, right?
Because they added social to music, and that was
didn't,
what
Ping
was,
didn't work.
Ping
terribly.
Didn't work. Although that was such a good idea.
So remember,
so cool.
Remember app.net.
Right. Yes. I paid for it.
I paid for it too, but they had the wrong model, which was they should not have charged the users. Right. They should have charged the developers.
Right.
And it should have been for the first 10,000, 50,000 calls to the API,
free. Of course.
After that, you pay. But you want to put ads on your client, you don't want ads on your client,
whatever you
want to
do.
Yeah. And if Twitter had taken that strategy and said, here's what we're going to be. We're not going to be an ad platform, because actually competing against Facebook and Google at scale, is, unless you're at their scale, is very difficult.
Mm.
They own the online ad businesses. But if you had said, look, we're going to be this infrastructure play, so to speak, and developers can just pay us by the pound for API calls, I think Twitter would have had probably a much more defensible and successful business.
So last August, I wrote a blog post for Recode on evolving Twitter, a message from our CEO. If the folks in the control room want to pull it up for the people watching, evolving Twitter, a message from our CEO on recode.com. And I wrote this because Jack was getting in the middle of a debate between Leslie Jones, the hilarious woman from Saturday Night Live, and Ghostbusters. Yeah. And Ghostbusters was terrible. The reboot was horrible. And so Milo Yiannopoulos, who is the big troll from the right, starts telling her she's horrible and calls her all kinds of very inappropriate names. And Jack gets into the middle of it. Even though Twitter has all these tools to block people, and I said, you know, why don't they just, if somebody has a lot of complaints or they say something vulgar, right? You would know if they say one of the inappropriate words, and you would know if they've gotten a lot of warnings against them, right? Because you can report people. Why don't you just blur those people's tweets out by default and say, click here to see the rest of the comments. They may include inappropriate things. And then people could turn that off in their settings if they want the unfiltered and they're part of the free speech camp as opposed to the snowflake, safe space, please don't hurt me with your words camp. Like, and sure enough, I don't know if you guys noticed, and I would be interested if you noticed, have you started to notice that replies sometimes are blurred out exactly as I designed? I asked somebody on Twitter to design it, and they, like, five people just put up different versions of how to blur it. And Now, when you use Twitter, if somebody says something that's a little bit charged, like the word idiot or something like that, it seems to be blurring those responses.
So I've seen
you've
that.
You've seen it?
I've seen it with...
I haven't seen it.
When you click into some photos and things like that, it's a really weird because it's poorly implemented.
Right.
You'll see on your phone a full screen hardcore porn photo. And then at the bottom, it won't show you the text of the tweet because it says this tweet may be sensitive.
I had that exact thing happen to me.
But wait, I'm seeing the whole thing right here. But at the bottom, you're not going to show me the link or whatever it was. Like,
right. They show the image, but not the copy. So they're like, this tweet may include. Yeah. So it says.
By that time, it's too late. Right.
Yeah. Because if you read Trump's tweets, mm-hmm. there's a new thing that's occurred. Yeah. And I did this myself to test it. People, because Trump gets so much activity on his tweets, everybody reads them. That you can hijack his tweets with funny stuff underneath them.
Yeah.
And as a verified user with a lot of people, I guess I get ranked a little bit higher. So I just put, is Trump going to get impeached? Yes or no? I got like 5,000 people voted on the survey. Right. So you can do replies and surveys. And so people are starting to do that.
People are figuring that out too. If two verified people start having a conversation under a particular post,
oh, right.
that ranks right at the top. You get two verified ones going back and forth.
You're verified, right, Peter?
Right mm-hmm.
yeah. Dave, you're not, of course, right?
No.
I'm not
sure. Brian, and they're like,
I'll get you, Brian.
Yeah, please.
But they don't want the guy with the Q-cat.
Yeah, I don't need to be verified. Not, yeah. And the best thing that happens.
They should have one, though, that instead of verified, it should be more like infamous, don't you think? Like, you have one for you and Milo, like an infamous tag.
I would love to be categorized with him. Thanks for that.
No.
But Trump is the best thing that happened to Twitter. Let's just
really?
Oh, I don't know if Twitter feels that way, but
to the rest of the world.
Let me ask this question.
Twitter was losing relevance. There was only us people at the table tweeting to each other.
So Facebook is the best thing that happened to Trump, and Trump's the best thing that happened to Twitter. There's a triangle there. It's pretty interesting.
I like it.
It is true. Well, here's the let me ask this question. Should there was a movement, Ellen Pao from
Reddit.
She was at Reddit.
Right.
That didn't last too long. And now she's with Kapoor Capital, and she's a partner over there. But previously, obviously, she had done a sexual harassment lawsuit with Kleiner Perkins that she lost. But it seemed like she did obviously experience some very significant harassment, but she lost the case. So I don't think she may have lost the case, but clearly she was harassed in my mind. Right. I'll put that out there.
Yeah. And it was a big visibility thing that didn't exist before, right?
Right. So I mean, I think she's she did lose, so I don't think it was cut and dry, but there was definitely harassment that occurred, so I think she, in a way, is vindicated. She wrote a whole blog post about how they should delete Trump's account. Do you guys think that Trump's account should be deleted if he is harassing other people and this kind of stuff? Because he clearly has, over his life, harassed people. That is no different than Milo Yiannopoulos, and I don't want to be the arbiter of free speech here, but when you call somebody a pig, like he's called people, stuff like that, or do you think, gosh, if he's the president of the United States, if you ban him, that just creates chaos, and you kind of want this guy to be tweeting. What are your thoughts on it? Could they possibly ban the president off of Twitter?
I don't think they can. I mean, would you ban your biggest user from your service, right?
Well, that's a pragmatic reason, but I'm also thinking
So Facebook actually has this too where they had the whole thing where there was that photo from Vietnam of the naked girl.
Yeah, the famous iconic.
And they deleted it saying it's child pornography.
Right.
And somebody was like, you know what, there's a newsworthiness to this that sort of transcends maybe other,
Right.
terms of service kind of concerns about the content.
Right.
And so I think that was probably maybe the best argument around Donald Trump, which is, even though he pushes some boundaries.
Right. We have no choice.
That things that might be not allowed for a more anonymous user.
Right.
Maybe don't apply in this case because there's a newsworthiness to the content.
Right.
But the legislature just said that because he's tweeting so much, we're going to add Twitter to the public archives to make sure that things aren't lost because he would delete tweets.
And he's
there are laws around public records, governmental records retention and things like that.
And I just want to point out that we did get 57 minutes into the program before saying the word Trump. I think we deserve a little bit of a golf clap for that. It was a pretty big accomplishment.
I didn't say it.
Here is the undercurrent. This is something I was hearing amongst industry people, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I'm gonna float for you what was floated for me in a group discussion amongst people who are extremely respected. Okay, and yes, the chat room can take a drink because we did mention Trump and I did mention Inside Connections and Information. Okay, but I haven't name dropped anybody yet.
Did you hear about this in your Tesla?
I was actually on a phone call in my Tesla. Drink.
Holy.
Drink. What? That's yeah, awesome. But I was in the Model S, not the X.
Got it. Oh, so you have two.
Three. But I was in serial number one. Okay, good. Now everybody's okay. Now the chat room can all drink.
Nice.
They're just plastered. They just collapsed. Yeah. Here's the crazy. This is the crazy theory ever. Okay, we all saw Zuckerberg going out and saying, I'm going to meet everybody in 50 states.
Yeah. Tractor.
And he like shows up at people's houses. Very weird, right? Like, why is he doing this? He's got a company to run. Is he going to run for president or whatever? And I said, you know what? I don't think that he's running for president. I mean, he might run for some office, of course. He talked about it secretly with Mark Andreessen. That came out in a lawsuit or a shareholder lawsuit because he wanted to take 2 years off or something. And Mark Andreessen was trying to figure out how to finagle that with his board. But it turns out there was this company, the Analytica company.
Cambridge Analytics.
That had spent a large – yeah. It's very well known that a large amount of money went into that company to buy ads on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As somebody pointed out, Facebook verifies every ad. If you want to place an ad, there's somebody who looks at the ad. Mm-hmm. They will never, as this person pointed out to me, ever allow you to put an affiliate link in there. It's against the terms of service. If you put too much text – I've seen this happen – on an image – they don't let you put text on images because they can't read it.
It's baked in, right?
It's baked in, so therefore they don't let you do that. So there's like massive filters. I've seen maybe 10 or 20% of the ads we do at launch for Launch Festival, whatever, get kicked back.
Sure.
Okay, so they're verifying the ads. Trump's buying the ads. Now this is where the theory gets interesting. They know that they're doing ads that are targeted to the people, not to get people to vote to vote for Trump. They know they're not going to get people to vote for Trump. It's very hard to get people to switch. But there was a group of people who came out to vote for Obama, who hadn't previously voted in elections, right? There was massive turnout. Obama had the best turnout ever. Those people were targeted.
Yeah. This is
known.
Yeah.
So they used Facebook to target those people. Those people are African-American in some cases and in these specific six states. So there was a big controversy that Facebook was allowing targeting people by race and the color of their skin. So now you have Zuckerberg potentially having to explain how he allowed the platform let fake news. Now you add fake news to it. A lot of these ads were fake news. So they were putting fake news on to get people to not vote for Hillary who were from certain demographics. Okay, this is a really bad picture. Now there's an investigation occurring. The investigation is going to be asked doing discovery. The Facebook has not released the ads that they approved. The ads are going to come out. What do the ads say? Nobody knows except for Facebook and the people who did it. Then you add another layer, and this is where it becomes totally insane. What if the Russians were stealing the names of these people and broke into the voter registration logs? There is a rumor
I'd heard that's been
going around that the way the Russians were able to help were that they had the list of the voters. They had the Democrats' list of the voters because they hacked the DNC, right?
Well, and they're and that's why they're trying to get into local voting servers.
So they weren't trying to switch the technology in the voting, but they were able to hack in and get lists of voters. They got the list of voters. They got them to Cambridge Analytica. They got Facebook to run fake news ads in this theory. Facebook approved the ads. Facebook got people to not show up.
So
it's all going to come out because of the crazy investigation going on now.
Well, Mueller's, he's interviewing what's his name, Pasquale, the digital director.
The digital director.
I can't remember his last name. It's Pasquade or something like that.
And then here's where it gets totally crazy.
Yeah, because you said you were going to lay a conspiracy theory. I'm waiting for that.
This last piece of what did Facebook know? So if you're Zuckerberg, you know this is all coming out. So how bad is it for Zuckerberg if it comes out that the Russians stole lists, targeted people, and Facebook was the tool in which fake news was approved by them to change it if it was in fact hacked, and then they made a reported $100 to $200 million off these ads. Wow. So Facebook profited in Russia, and it could be Russian money. That's the piece. That's the conspiracy.
But I don't think Facebook could be held responsible for this.
It's what they're built to do. I mean, this is like you're using Facebook to do what Facebook is built to do. And I think there's actually probably more sinister, crazy stuff going on at Facebook that they're listening to our phones, all these other things,
right?
That could be even bigger than that.
Well, they are in the Messenger app using location services. They're putting iBeacons. They're mailing them out to restaurants to put in their store. These restaurateurs have no idea what an iBeacon is.
Plug it in.
And
what are you talking? Wait. What is Facebook doing now?
This sounds good.
They're sending
Bluetooth beacons.
Bluetooth beacons. The reason we talked about this on the show before. The reason why the Facebook app and the Messenger app are separated because people had push notifications turned off
for
on
Facebook.
The Facebook app.
So they got a second swing at the bat.
Second swing, yeah. And then they've put in the iBeacon technology in that. So I've literally had friends walk out of stores and those ads start showing up.
Wow.
So this micro-targeting Minority Report is happening on your phone.
Well, it's
screen.
Also about closing the loop on click attribution, right? So that if you click on an ad
and you
and
went
then
to the store, they can charge you twice as much. They could probably charge you again. They could probably charge you once for the click and once if the person comes to the store. So you could pay by visit instead of pay by click.
Yeah.
The other piece of this is Zuckerberg's initial reaction to that fake news or anything could sway an election was that's preposterous. And then he quickly fell back on that because you can't say that Facebook.
Because, right. In your deck for the advertisers, you're like, we can sway elections. And then publicly you're like, well, I don't think we swayed the election.
So I can play the Jason's game also. So I was at a very exclusive event just after the election.
Drink.
Sheryl Sandberg was there speaking.
In a Tesla.
And she rode in a Tesla.
Did I drop you off of my Tesla?
Yeah. And people were asking her, what the f***? Sorry.
Sorry.
But people actually did say that. I know. I'm sorry. I apologize.
All right, sorry. Frack.
I usually don't swear that much. But people did actually say that to her. They were like, people were angry.
At her.
That's
my point about Zuckerberg being on the road. And so, it's a redemption tour.
And so people said, if you have all this data, if Facebook's so good at data, how did you let this happen? How did you not see this? And she said, we were blind to it. And she said, we all thought Hillary was going to win. So we didn't take this problem seriously.
Ah, so that's the reason.
Yes.
So it's not that they didn't see it. They said, well, this is getting really interesting.
They said, we're getting paid and it's not going to matter.
We're getting paid and it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Therefore, they never in their mind said, we take $200 million. They were targeting people with fake news. Who cares? We just got the money.
Yeah.
Which makes total sense when you think about it. Facebook is a money grab. They really don't care.
If you look, not to get too far afield, but like, a lot of people's behavior is best explained. I mean, why did Comey do what he did? He thought Hillary was going to win. So he thought, you know what? Hillary's going to win. I need to preserve the reputation of the FBI because it's going to come out that if I withheld information. And same thing with
Obama.
Which
then goes back
Obama
to
did
our inability to poll. So because the polls couldn't pick up on this because people would not say that we're going to vote for Trump,
you know what?
That effect actually, is an effect.
Actually, if you read Nate Silver, the polls were actually pretty accurate and shows that Hillary won by about the margin she was expected to win by.
Right.
What they couldn't pick up on was some of the slight stuff in the swing states.
But it was just too. The signal was too minute.
Well, and it's also harder to poll harder to poll the states. There was not necessarily a lot of good polling in swing states.
What are the chances, knowing what we know, because I want to keep this tech-based and not make it a political show, but knowing what we know about hacking, what are the chances that other countries, Dave, know much more than we do about what occurred in, you know, we have all these other countries are able to spy just as well as we are, and perhaps even better because they have access, I guess, to the European side of the transatlantic cables and satellites and whatever. What are the chances are that one of those foreign countries, Germany comes to mind, or the French, that they have information that was hacked or that would be pertinent?
Yeah, so this is just like the Tor networks, the Onion router.
Yeah.
It's supposedly secure.
But it was designed by the FBI or CIA?
Well, it was designed by nerds.
NSA.
But then the CIA and NSA created the endpoints. And if you control the endpoints, if you're that fiber link, or if you're that connection going to the real world, then you can monitor all the traffic going in and out of the Tor. Mm-hmm. And that's why everything is vulnerable. And look at Vizio TVs. They had software that was running on the TV to show which programs you were watching. And not just TV shows over the air, what streaming services you were watching as well. So anything with an internet connectivity now has the ability for a two-way communication back to the server. Mm. Think about all the webcam takeovers that have happened as well. Right. So the IoT backlash that we're going to see is going to be pretty interesting in the next few years.
What should we do, Peter, about specifically voting? Because we now know the Russians were specifically trying to hack into specific machines and or locations. Is this correct? And what should we do as a country in terms of thinking about voting? Because we do have this wonderful you know, because we're a United States of America, and mm-hmm. we're 50 states, I guess every state has their own, and then even locations have their own processes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to hack the whole thing. There's no central point of failure.
Yeah.
What should we do?
Well, so I think that we need to make sure that we have paper backups, paper mm-hmm. ballots, right? So that we can actually do a hand manual recount of votes. And I think that we should also make sure that the companies which are producing these voting machines, that they have software that we can understand and can be auditable. I would put someone like Bruce Schneier in charge. I would create an electoral – not going to happen under this administration.
Who's that?
He's one of the best security experts in the world. Right. You know, I would point like
– Oh, he's the guy who has the website that got the denial of service attack? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that massive denial.
And so I would take a guy like that and I would say, you know what?
You
put in charge
us.
Of Blue Ribbon Commission – and set up best practices, you know, make sure that we solve this problem. It is, since it's a state-by-state and locality-by-locality thing, it's tough for the federal government to sort of mandate. Each state is, frankly, in charge of its own elections. Even though there's a federal election commission, it's not in charge of mandating how each individual state conducts its votes. That's why we have all these different machines and all these different ways of voting.
A few years ago, I went to Estonia in my Uber drone, and... Okay, I flew in a real plane, but... But
you're talking about the flying cars coming. Cars.
Yeah, but Estonia...
Let's talk about that in a minute.
They've gone to a chip-based system for everything. It's one ID, it's your ATM, it's your taxes, it's your water bill, your driver's license.
So like the new chip in our...
In your credit cards.
In your credit cards.
So it's very similar technology, challenge and response. Russia, which Estonia used to be a bloc country from Russia, Russia DOS'd the country... and shut down that system. So think about this. Now you can't get money out of the ATM. Right. You can't pay your taxes. Jesus. So they had to literally cut their ties to the internet from a whole country. So as much as I want the future to be this the state of challenge and responses and keys and encryption, Peter's right. This paperback.
Can you imagine, right, a fail whale on election day? Just, sorry, we don't know who won.
Well, there's another thing.
It's going to – something. No, we sooner or later, we're going to have a presidential election that
– goes down.
There's going to be there's going to be something that happens, whether it's some credible instance of hacking or some sort of technical failure or something that happens that calls the legitimacy of the election into question. It calls the legitimacy into question. That might be the next election, but sooner or later, it's going to happen and it's going to be a huge issue. And so, better to get ahead of it now, and we're not doing anything about it. In fact, you know, Trump doesn't want to even talk about there being any sort of issue with the last election because he's worried it calls the legitimacy of his victory into question.
Right.
And so
it's particularly challenging.
Yeah. So he's not going to address it.
Well, I just want to put in my vote for next election. Vote for Bloomberg and Sandberg. Okay, go ahead. I voted for 2020.
No, I think there's going to be a race to see whether our elections turn into like a blockchain based election or voting on Facebook. So those two things are going to, like, which one's going to happen first, right?
Yeah. Blockchain. All right, when we get back, Facebook is now has an emergency check-in service that's a little bit controversial. When we get back on This Week in Tech.
May I step in for a moment just to mention a brand that's very closely associated with me because they've been an advertiser for a very, very long time. In fact, I think they've been with a radio show since the beginning, which is like more than 10 years. Carbonite.com. I just talked the other day to Carbonite's founder, David Friend. Love David. He's now an old friend. And it just reminds me how deeply the engineers at Carbonite understand cloud backup. Not only have they been doing it longer, they have a deep understanding to the point where they're writing their own software for writing to the disk. This is a really sophisticated operation. But I don't say that very often because really – the thing that's great about Carbonite is you don't have to worry about it. All that sophistication is hidden. It is easy. Go to Carbonite.com. They've got plans for home and office. What it is automatic cloud backup. Backup to their servers. And it's for emergencies. It's for, you know, your business burns down, right? Imagine what would happen if all your backups, all your computers burnt down. You would be out of business. So many of you don't back up, and I know that the ones who do back up because they lost data, you don't have to lose data to become a backup fanatic. And Carbonite does it right. You pay once a year, flat rate. It's easy. It's very affordable. And it's one of those things you set it and forget it, and they just take care of the rest. And by the way, they've got plans of all for all different kinds of people, all different kinds of business, for Mac, for PC, for home, for office. Their business solutions range from everything from a just software you run on one PC to software that supports servers, to their eVault, their hardware on premises, hardware backup that then backs up to Carbonite. That's actually a great solution. And if you're worried about ransomware, Carbonite is the solution. You don't have to worry about WannaCry and ransomware because Carbonite keeps you safe. You got to try it today. Go to Carbonite.com. You could try it free. There's no credit card required. It really is free. But I have one request. Use the offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T. That way they'll know you heard it here. Helps us, and it helps you too because you get 2 months free if you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get it back. Get the best. Carbonite.com. Automatic, continuous cloud backup. To put your data where in the cloud where it's safe no matter what happens. Carbonite.com. Just don't forget to use the offer code TWIT. Now we go back to the show. Thank you, guys.
Yes, welcome back to This Week in Tech. I am your guest host. Leo Laporte is on a beach somewhere drinking a pina colada, I hope. Thanks, Leo, for allowing me to do this. It's always an honor and a privilege to be here in Petaluma with Peter Rojas, Dave Matthews, and Brian Alvey. This week we saw, in a very professional crew, I might add, this is really behind the scenes here, it's very tight. AV, everything, very tight production. This week, back to Facebook, if you were in the location, as I understand it, of a tragedy, like we had this skyscraper fire in London. I'm not sure the name of the...
Grenfell.
This horrible tragedy, which seems like it could have been avoided. Putting that aside, if you were in the vicinity, Facebook then says, hey, please check in. On top of that, if you don't check in and you're in the area, and the people were saying that they were way far out of the Grenfell area,
yeah,
like they might have been like nowhere near it, a mile away or whatever, 58 people have died. Wow, that's according to the chat room here, that's just horrific.
Mike, probably going to go up.
Well, because they haven't been able to get in the building. Is that my understanding?
I think they're
still going through it.
I mean, they still have to, yeah, verify. And there are people that are still missing that aren't accounted
for. How
do
we not have the technology to stop these kind of things? Anyway, put that aside for a second. Facebook, I mean, it's nice that Facebook wants to make sure everybody's okay. But here's the thing that people are criticizing them for. As Facebook is apt to do, you have no choice but to check in or you are listed as not accounted for. Brian, what do you think of this approach that if you were not accounted for, you're unaccounted for? I mean, it seems like unnecessarily forcing people to use Facebook. It seems heavy-handed. And it also seems like you're... It seems overreaching in a way. Is there intent?
So
what's
it seems
the intent
like it is.
Is?
I don't know what their intent is. We own the planet and everybody's on our service.
Right.
Therefore, it's the universal check-in.
Right.
So there's that. I don't like that it's opt-out versus opt-in. And you haven't told me yet why they say that this is the reason they're doing it. But I would think that they would say, well, if you died in the fire, you wouldn't be able to check in. Therefore, we have to list you as missing. But
until
if you're safe,
you check in.
Then you can totally check in. So let's make it this way. So the people who survive something or aren't in some problem can actually use the product. Because obviously you can use your phone.
This reminds me how the group functionality worked. When they first set up groups, you can add anybody to a group. So the second they started the group...
You hear all the chatter.
They put myself, Mike Arrington, and Mark Zuckerberg in a fake group called Nambla, which was like a pedophile group. And they called it like pedophile group, and they put a third of us in there, and then it became a TechCrunch story. Is this them overreaching again, Peter? Is this how you would design the product? Or do you think they have a case to be made? If you think there's a case to be made that, hey, listen, these kind of tragedies occur very infrequently, it's in everybody's best interest for everybody to check in.
So I am by no means a Facebook apologist. I closed my Facebook account 7 years ago.
I know.
And never went back.
Crazy.
But I think that it's something where there isn't necessarily there's sort of a bit of damned if they do, damned if they don't, right?
Okay.
If it's opt-in, if somebody has to have the foresight to opt in to something like this, when there's an emergency, then it only will list them as missing if they don't happen to check in. This thing doesn't really work because then you don't know who has already opted in, who hasn't. I would say that also Facebook, again, these sorts of disasters or emergencies are so infrequent that it's not necessarily going to do very much to raise their engagement numbers overall. Mm. At least I should hope that there aren't enough of these emergencies and disasters. And certainly Facebook is not lacking for engaged users at this point anyway. So I hate not to be, I don't necessarily want to take too cynical of an approach to it. I mean, they don't have to offer any sort of service like this at all.
Right. So maybe it's just based on their past behavior. You kind of always think they're overreaching and making these things just a little too
totally
aggressive.
But
in this case,
I mean, I don't want to overthink it.
Well, I like Peter's point, which is that this is a thing in your app that you're seeing, some piece of news, some thing in your newsfeed that you can't run ads against.
You know? Right. If you run ads against it, it looks really bad.
Why are they doing it?
Yeah.
But they also just added a feature where you'll be able to donate to the Red Cross.
Now, this is very interesting. Yeah. So they'll attach to a tragedy. So if they're, I mean, and this would include terrorism, I would take it, or a tsunami, or a fire, or an earthquake.
When you check in that you're safe from a nearby disaster, you'll have the option to share and donate to a registered nonprofit related to the incident.
Who picks the nonprofit? Because that would be like very controversial. Something happens in Haiti. Remember in Haiti, you had a bunch of people set up their own nonprofits, and then they were hiring all of their... It was a big controversy. Oh. One of the musicians, I can't remember
who. Wyclef Jean?
I don't want to say because I don't know the details. I can't remember the details.
Actually, I'm not sure.
Sure. Poor Wyclef. If Wyclef did embezzle money, shame on you. And if you didn't, we apologize. Somebody was involved in some shenanigans in taking money for Haiti and then hiring their family and whatnot. But in this case, who would get to pick? Does it mention, Dave, if there was a tragedy, they're picking the Red Cross or they're picking, you know, America for Haiti or something?
Yeah, it just says in the coming weeks it'll be out there. And to prevent people from abusing the feature, Facebook spokesperson said that a team of human moderators would manually interview or review each fundraiser.
Well, this is a big issue with GoFundMe now, right? Where there was this UPS shooting in San Francisco
a few days ago. Yes, I saw that.
And people are setting up fake GoFundMe campaigns supposedly to benefit the families of the victims.
So I know the woman who runs GoFraudMe.
Yeah.
And so if you follow GoFraudMe on Twitter or on Facebook too, Adrian, I think is her name.
Huh.
I hope I got that right. But and she's friends with Facebook friends of mine, journalist people. It's fantastic. So she started out with, there was a GoFundMe, and she kept bringing it to their attention. Please, can you take this off? It's a scam. This happens all the time. There's an accident on the highway. Somebody's mom dies. Take the picture, stick it on a GoFundMe, and collect $3,000 from all the elementary schools and all the friends and churches nearby, and then take the money and leave.
Wow.
So there's so much of that. It's a big piece of
– And they don't verify this?
I don't know what they do. I think
GoFundMe does.
Yeah. They need to know your bank account, get your driver's license?
No other service has this reputation that they have, and no other service has
GoFundMe is pretty low bar.
Easy going?
Right, yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's how they've grown, right, is they've had a low bar.
Ah.
And if they had really high standards, the service wouldn't be as successful as
Correct.
It is.
Yep. All right, let's take a final break and let's see what happened this week. There was so much that happened on the Twit Network. Let's see what happened on the Twit Network.
Previously on Twit.
Brian, one of the things that we have to watch out for, because we're geeks, is exposure. This is the Winterial pop-up tent. Unclip it, and then you just go, oh, I want a house.
Boom.
Boom, and that's what you got.
This Week in Law.
Kiss and, frankly, a variety of rock bands over the last several decades have used the devil horn sign. I guess some debate whether the thumb should be out or not. Gene Simmons has filed a trademark application to trademark that, claiming that he came up with it on his own.
I think the court can take judicial notice of the fact that Ronnie James Dio invented the devil horns. I think there's prior art here.
This Week in Enterprise Tech.
This is actually an interesting one and a bit scary for any person who wears or needs modern-day medical devices. After reviewing 7 pacemaker products from 4 different vendors, they were able to find 10 security vulnerabilities that most of them shared, and then also found that from the components that they're actually made up of, included 8,600 security flaws.
They're concentrate on the medicine, which, God bless them, that's what they really should be. But they really and truly need to bring in security specialists as part of the design process.
Twit, making the world safe for technology.
And what an amazing week it was on the Twit Network. Let's see what's going to happen next week.
It's been a few weeks since the OnePlus 5 was announced, and this week we will hear more details about the Android phone with a Snapdragon 835 processor and a rumored dual camera setup on the back, if the leaks are to be believed. If you are a heavy user of Facebook groups, You might be interested in the first ever Facebook Community Summit on June 22nd and 23rd in Chicago. Admins will gather and share in real life, hopefully giving each other a lot of thumbs up with their actual thumbs. And finally, this week, more than 26,000 screaming fans will also get to interact in real life with their favorite YouTube creators at VidCon, one of the largest conferences for people who love online video. Those are just some of the stories that Jason Howell and myself will be covering this week on Tech News Today, every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific. See you there.
Wow, it's going to be an exciting week. I cannot wait to see what's happening at VidCon. With all the YouTube stars. It's a little bit of madness over at YouTube right now because a lot of the stars, I was watching one of them who is super critical of YouTube right now because they keep turning off monetization on his ads.
Right.
He's the guy who starts every video with, "You beautiful bastards. How you doing, you beautiful bastards?"
Is that the Philip DeFranco?
Philip DeFranco.
Oh, look at that.
There you go. Hey, so get that guy.
You're a millennial now.
Philip DeFranco. How you doing, you beautiful bastards? And anyway, Philip DeFranco is like really going ham, and he's basically that's hard as you can imagine. And he is really upset because they keep turning off every time he talks about the news. They turn off monetization because they don't want to have ads on news stories like the fire we were talking about, or you know, any news story. They don't trust this. But then CNN, he pointed out, had tons of ads on there. So obviously they have a double standard. And he is actually now going with the Patreon kind of route of, I think he's doing it direct where people pay him directly. And then he's doing videos off of YouTube. Everybody seems to be a little bit upset about it.
It seems like a couple years ago this since came through as well, right?
It just seems at a certain point you get too big for YouTube. But YouTube specifically now has had to say, I think we got a show title. You beautiful bastards. Specifically, now YouTube is turning off the monetization on a lot of ads. I think it's even after under 10,000. It's just a harder game to play.
Didn't you do a blog post on this?
Yeah.
Years ago.
YouTube farm.
I just said to myself, they're exerting too much control over it to make it worth anybody's time. Also this week, E3. E3 is next week or it just happened?
No, it just happened.
It just happened. And now E3, I went to the first one years and years and years ago when they launched the first PlayStation. Yeah.
And that's the gaming show, by the way.
It's the gaming show, E3. My understanding is it used to be only trade. Then it became like trade, but everybody kind of snuck in.
Yeah.
And then they said, no, we're going back to trade.
Yep.
And then this year they said, let's make it Comic-Con. Is that right? Where they let like 15,000 people in one day or something crazy?
I think they're opening it back. I actually went the one year where they split it up and put it in like in a hangar in Santa Monica and made it really small. And
they made it a trade show. Yeah. I remember that.
It was pretty bad.
It was terrible.
Yeah. But there were, but there's still like, you know, what's great is that it's still an event where the big players make big announcements. I mean, I thought the announcement of the Xbox One X, which the name I don't necessarily love.
Well, but you want to keep that brand of Xbox One. Right?
Yeah, no, I get that. So. It's a little.
The X was cost
a little clunky.
Was it cost reduced?
So they dropped the price on the Xbox One S, I believe, or the original Xbox One, whichever it is. But the Xbox One X is what was called Project Scorpio. And so this will be their high-end 4K-ready box, which I think is going to launch in
November
for $500. And
this is the new Xbox.
The new one that's going to, yeah. And so it'll be backwards compatible, so you can play existing Xbox One. And I think even Xbox 360.
What are they calling it again?
Xbox One X. I know.
So it was Xbox One, now it's One X.
Yeah.
Xbox still the best-selling console, right?
So actually, the PlayStation 4 was beating the Xbox One in this generation.
People still want these devices, or do you think it's going to go back to PC-based games because of the headsets, or do you think the headsets will actually win with the consoles?
Well, so obviously the PS4 has PlayStation VR,
right.
And then Microsoft actually said very little about VR. At this, with relation to the Xbox One X, but they do have Microsoft's OEM partners are introducing VR headsets later this year, like Lenovo and I think Acer has
so
one.
So third parties will put.
They haven't confirmed, but the speculation is that these third party headsets will.
Do people
work
want
with,
that? Do the console people want that, or do they just want to play like the most amazing? What is it? Overcast that everybody's playing, or whatever that one is.
There's a Overwatch.
Overwatch, not Overcast. Yeah, thank you. Right. Somebody's laughing. They're like, what is this guy talking about? Overwatch, right. Overwatch is the big one.
Yeah.
But do they really want VR or do they just want the next Overwatch?
I think it's both. And
really?
I mean, different gamers want different things, right? I mean, I think, you know, gaming is so big now that it's hard to sort of cast everyone with one, you know, paint everyone with one brush. I tend to be more VR focused in my gaming, but there's certainly, like I was saying earlier, there are certain games that you can play in 4K, which just look amazing. And if Red Dead Redemption 2 doesn't come out for PC, I'll definitely buy an Xbox One X to play it in 4K.
The PS4 VR is pretty amazing. And the controller shows up in the space glowing. You don't see your hands, but they really did a nice job with the integration of gameplay with the VR. Better than any other experience, I think.
Yeah. And Skyrim for VR.
Yeah.
Which is coming.
I am particularly excited because celebrating the 20th anniversary of Age of Empires, which was a game I loved in my 20s. We used to play it like crazy. The real-time strategy game Age of Empires is coming back. They've remastered it. And supposedly Bill Gates had something to do with it. In a Reddit AMA, he said, hey, we got to bring this back. People love it. So they're doing Age of Empires, a definitive edition, and they remastered all the visuals in 4K, and they did this incredible video where they show the original game, and then they show like this incredible 4K where you can zoom in, and it looks just amazing compared to where it was at. But is this going to be a trend where you think like some of these games are going to come back? The same way we have, they have to do Ghostbusters again. They got to reboot everything. Are they going to just reboot every video game now, Brian?
Of course they are.
Yeah.
It's no different than, you know, well, you said Ghostbusters, but no, they bring everything back. Why not?
Yeah.
Right? If you now have the money to buy all that stuff you couldn't buy when you were a kid,
right,
and they can charge you a fortune for it, and you have to buy a rig for it, you know, go to town.
Interesting. I'm wondering at what age, Peter, we both have kids, and you have kids a little bit older.
Both my sons do Overwatch and VR, and they split between the two, and they fight over the one PC we have.
What age is the right age to introduce kids to video games, and then what are the rules? So what are you thinking about for your boys, Peter? Are they allowed to play games?
A little bit.
And how do you approach that? Because they have kids who are playing Minecraft at home for 10 hours a day, right? They're contemporaries.
So I've convinced my kids, they're 4 and 8, that it's more fun to watch me play than to play themselves. I'm not kidding, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's amazing.
Incredibly sinister.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
unbelievable.
They're like, can we play Legend of Zelda? I'm like, yeah. So they sit and watch me play Legend of Zelda.
Really?
If they'll watch people on YouTube play for 10 hours, they might as well watch that.
Totally.
Right?
This is inspiring.
Yeah, no, they're giving me tips. They're like, you know, go to that shrine and stuff like that. So.
Parker, I'm just speaking to one of the young people in the audience. Parker, I'm going to introduce my daughter. I'm going to let her know that eating ice cream is better when she watches me eat ice cream. Much better experience to watch me eat ice cream than to have her actually eat the ice cream. Brian, what is your approach to video games with your kids now? Because we all grew up in the Atari generation and our parents didn't know what to think. It was kind of like voodoo to them. They were a little concerned. Are you concerned about and how do you manage the number of hours? Because this stuff is designed now. Mm-hmm. When we played it, they just barely got the games out and they barely worked.
Right.
But now they're designed to be addictive, right? Yeah. They've added gamification to a level that's different than just can you get to the top of Donkey Kong? It's addicting with the badges and the gold and the coins and all the stuff.
Sure.
How do you handle it?
No, so we have a strict rule in our house is you can't play video games or watch YouTube while you sleep or when you shower or when you're swimming in the pool. Other than that, it's
so
like
if there's
24
water involved,
hours a day. That's it. No, we really don't limit them much. I mean, we want them to eat with us and you know, not be in a game.
So when they're eating, they can't
I don't have any concern with them building stuff in Minecraft, what they're downloading, showing each other stuff, working together on things.
It sounds to me, Brian, there was a water problem near technology.
Did somebody drop the Vive
exactly.
in the pool? Telling me somebody took the Oculus Rift in the pool?
I think the kids are figuring out there's got to be a way we can play while we're
in
the
pool. See, I think they thought, when you got the Oculus Rift, they thought they said Oculus Skift, and they thought you were just
voting
right
thing.
In there.
That's a really bad joke.
We don't stop them. I mean,
what about having the devices be monitor out and in a family room as opposed to privately using devices? Because this is another thing I'm a little bit concerned with the devices at school, because in my daughter's last school, kids were in the playground. They would let grades K through 6 or maybe even 8 or K through 6 would have recess together. And I just thought, well, this is crazy because whatever the 5 and 6 year olds are looking on their phones, because the 5th and 6th graders have on their phones, which they're starting to get phones.
Right.
Oh my God, they're going to just start showing things on their phone, and phone is open to everything.
So we lucked out, which is that we only have the one, like, you know, Alienware VR ready Vive PC in the house. So they fight over that. Each kid has like a, you know, $2,000 Mac, and they hate me because we only have one Windows machine in the house, right? So they fight over that. So, but it's in a central room, and it happens to be a screen, and we can see what they're looking at all day long.
Got it.
So that's actually, I've never thought about it. We didn't design it that way, but they're forced to sit at a card table in our like living room.
What about phones and stuff like that? Are you get? I was talking to one parent who told me they have an app on the phone that everything on the phone is recorded.
Yeah, we haven't done that yet.
Peter, what are your thoughts when you introduce a phone to the mix? Are you going to be trust but verify, or verify and don't worry about trust?
I'm not sure yet. I mean,
because your kids are going to Google this video, find out. Yeah.
My older son has, you know, his YouTube videos do quite well.
I know he's got some cooking videos.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a school that doesn't allow any sort of screens or devices at the school, but they also strongly discourage it at home as well. And it's actually kind of nice. So the kids are not, it's not a big part of their lives. Obviously, they see it, and they obviously watch me play video games sometimes and things like that. But I'm not sure when I would introduce a phone. I mean, I have an 8-year-old is the oldest one.
He's got to be talking about it.
You know, he's not really that focused on it, to be honest. I don't think... I think that we think that they're obsessed with it because we're obsessed with them. But at least for my kids, like they don't spend a lot of time like demanding a phone or arguing about a phone, getting a phone.
Dave, I would ask you about your kids, but you would have to be able to
find someone to love me.
Exactly, yeah. And I know you're single.
I know where you were going with that.
I was just, you know,
well put.
I don't want to make you feel bad.
No. But when I have children, I do want children. But when I do, they'll have full Google Contacts, Retinal. VR, maybe the Matrix.
So you'll let them have
in the back.
You'll let them have the wetware.
Yeah, I'll have the
brain
full
computer.
Yeah, I'll do the NSA.
That's
going to
be the real
Elon
discussion.
Elon Musk mesh.
Yeah. The mesh. I mean, that's going to be the real discussion. Right. Is like your kids are going to come and say, "Hey, can I get like AirPods?
I don't want
implanted.
A tattoo or a piercing.
It's not going to be a tattoo piercing. Like, can I implant this into my brain? It's gonna be, absolutely.
But
not.
Just like in 2006, the NSA had the forked fiber, the closet in the room where all the fiber was cloned. I'll have that same wetware fiber clone too. Nice.
All right, we'll have some closing thoughts when we get back on This Week in Tech.
May I interrupt one more time? You guys feel like you're a little, you need a snack. Can I just say it? A little, and we are going to, John, bring in the Nature Box. Nature Box all round.
Yum, yum, yum with that.
Everybody
Nature
gets a This is the best part about Twitter. It's the Nature Box snack time. What do you do when you need a snack, but all you could find is junk food? You know, you go back and you've got the vending machine with your, you know, 10-year-old candy bars in there, and you know you're going to buy it, and you're going to eat it, and you're going to feel terrible in about 10 minutes. Self-control isn't going to do it. You need Nature Box. Start snacking healthy. When you're given the choice, and we give our staff Nature Box, when you're given the choice, Nature Box snacks, they taste great, you want them, but they're also better for you. Created with high-quality ingredients, they're free from artificial colors and flavors and sweetening, and they're so delicious. Big Island pineapple, always one of our favorites. It's just the best dried pineapple, and that's all it is. Chewy, satisfying, flavorful. You open the bag, and you feel like you're on the islands. It's, oh, man. And all the bags, by the way, they're nice-sized cranberry almond bites. Ooh, you may want to eat the whole thing there. Oh, you know what Sarah Lane used to love? She ate us out of the whole wheat raspberry figgy bars. There were never any left. Nature Box recently made their service better because you asked for it. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want. Great for your business. And there's no minimum purchase, and you can cancel anytime. So it's a service that really is for you. It really serves you. Go to naturebox.com/twit. Naturebox.com/twit. Check out the snack catalog. There are 100 snacks to choose from and more all the time. And if at any time you don't like the snack, they will replace it for you absolutely free. But so be adventurous. They've got sweet, savory, spicy, and so many delicious snacks. You'll never get bored. Naturebox. And new snacks every month, based completely on your feedback, customer feedback. So you tell them what you like. If they don't have it, they'll get it. Right now, you're going to save even more because we're giving you 50% off your first order. Half off when you go to naturebox.com/twit. Don't let these guys in the studio have all the fun. You should have some NatureBox at home or at the office. Naturebox.com/twit. Your kids will love it too, by the way. And get 50% off your first order. NatureBox.com/twit. We thank him so much for the support of This Week in tech. Now let's wrap things up with our great roundtable. Thanks, guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to This Week in Tech. Honey, we shrugged the paddle. And we're all going swimming right now in the deep end of the pool. And we're trying to keep up with our microphones.
But hey, everybody. Can't.
We got Nature Box here. I'm going to pass out a little Nature Box. And if anybody wants... Hey, I'm trying to pass out some Nature Box. Leo had no idea that when he got the...
moving table.
The moving table that would be used in this fashion. Oh, my God. Oh, ah, we're falling. The table's going on.
No, okay, we'll adjust the table.
For those of you listening, you can't get the joke because we're... Leo installed a table that you can go up and down. I think we have a name for the show. Show title, Honey, We Shrunk the Panel. But here we go. Nature Box being given out here. Let's pass along some Nature Box to everybody.
Oh, my God.
Peter loves these very natural Peter. This one. Hey, I'll give one to the audience. Okay, somebody over here. Catch. It's coming. Whoa.
And he knocked out a camera.
All right, Nature Box.
Oh, and he knocked over
Thanks for sponsoring Twitter. Okay.
I think that's a new challenge for the audience.
Yes, absolutely.
No, the IoT hack his table. During the show. And
all right, here we go.
And down.
This is if anybody from DEF CON is listening, if you figure out how to hack this table,
that'd be great, right?
I will send
Don't
you.
Give them a crunchy barbecue.
We
twist.
Will send you a year of Nature Box.
Right.
The first hacker to move the table live. I don't think the table's IP enabled.
Well, it's Internet of Table. It's IoT.
Internet of Table.
ABLE.
It's connected to a server in China right now.
So. All right. As we wrap up here, I'm going to ask my panel, what is their favorite gadget, app, service, or generally startup that they've engaged with in the past 6 months? Again, your favorite app, your favorite service, favorite website, any of those things, your favorite new technology, gadget, hardware, service, software, any of those items. Can't pick something that, but you can't pick New Air, okay, Dave?
All right,
I'm just letting you know. I mean, I know New Air is doing wonderfully, but what is your favorite new thing? Like Oprah's favorite new things. Peter, you seem ready. And it could be two or three.
You know, I have a Vive headset. I play a lot of VR and a couple of games that I'm really excited about. Okay. Star Trek Bridge Crew, which is...
We're playing this later, right?
The four of us could play. It's a collaborative, cooperative game. You play the bridge crew of a Starfleet vessel, and one person plays captain, and one person plays helmsman.
I could be Kirk?
You can play the old school Enterprise.
Peter,
you can play...
The Romulans have come!
And it's great. You go on these missions and you have to coordinate, right? You have to work together. I mean, engineering has to make sure that they move power from the shields to the engines and things like that, or make sure that the...
I'm giving it all they can, Peter.
It's a lot of fun.
Is it?
It's a lot of fun.
And adults are playing this. When your wife sees you and Peter, you and Ryan playing this.
Full costume.
And yeah, when you're in full... No, seriously.
With the ears.
If your wife comes in and she sees you playing this, like, what's the discussion like? Does she tell you have like a timer? Put a little egg timer?
I'm wearing this headset. Right. I'm sitting there and last time I was playing, I was tactical. And I'm like...
He's dead, Jim.
Like, permission to fire photon torpedoes, Captain. You know?
Damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor.
Target destroyed, Captain. Yeah, well, if we take it
Not
very seriously.
Miracle worker. So literally, and does she laugh at you? Or?
She's very cross.
I can tell that this is like, I mean, it's one thing to drink beer all day and watch like back-to-back football games. It's a whole nother thing to be in a Starfleet battle when your kids need to like do their math homework.
Yeah. No, I usually play after they go to bed, so I don't have that level of guilt.
But
you do really feel like you're in the same, I mean, I'll be sitting here and the captain will be, you know, behind, and you look back and you see the other player. You see an avatar of the other person, and it maps your hand movements and stuff like that. It's very immersive.
Can you play Ensign Crusher? Is there an ensign in this? Can we add a fifth? Will Wheaton's getting the short end of the stick.
It's just four right now.
They got to get Will Wheaton in there.
In fact,
I think Will Wheaton should just basically, they should just pay him specifically to play VR for 12 hours a day.
I would watch him if he played it on Twitch.
What are we, I mean, I think we could get Will Wheaton for what, like 20, 50 bucks an hour? We'll just say, Will,
I think
we'll
he's
pay
more
you.
Than that.
Credits.
If I made the software, I would literally pay Will Wheaton to be there. They should pay cast members.
So they actually did.
Like a
they did a promo video where they got, I think they got LeVar Burton.
He's totally available.
And I can't remember who else. But
he's available.
But they got members of the crew.
I think LeVar Burton, I think, is doing like voicemail messages right now. He'll do VR
He's doing like a Reading Rainbow.
Actually could be,
the Reading Rainbow Kickstarter reboot thing.
Yeah. Anyway. No, I like it. Livardi is cool. But this is actually really interesting. Think about it. Like, people do celebrity appearances. That's a big Star Trek thing. We were just talking about, what's the parody film? The
Galaxy Quest.
Oh my God, Galaxy Quest.
Just,
incredible.
Just rewatched it a week ago.
I've seen that film like 3 or 4 times. It gets better every time.
So good.
But they could literally do a VR where you go and play with, what would those Trekkies pay to literally be there with Will Wheaton, LeVar Burton?
Oh, people would pay, totally. I mean,
but what would they pay?
I think the answer is anything.
I think they would pay $1,000.
I don't know about $1,000.
To play for 2 hours with them. You don't need to have everybody play. You just get like 2 or 3 people and you record it.
Syndicate it, yeah.
It's like these guys who go to rock and roll camp. You know what rock and roll camp is? These guys, like, whatever people in, like, whatever hair metal thing will, you pay $5,000 to play with them.
You get to play with, like, the third bass player from Styx or whatever. Right. Like, not even like the original.
In related news, I'm going on tour with the original members of Dire Straits this summer. What is your favorite gadget? A wand is an easy choice.
So it's to be determined whether or not I'll use this a lot this summer. But
he's holding up the Amazon wand.
Amazon wand. We'll see if that's good. I'm going to be testing that. I'll be talking about it on my social media channels. But personally, I got a Boosted Board, which is
explain what it is to people who don't know.
Version 2 of the skateboard came out. I have a Tesla Dream, but not a wallet that will support that. Or 3 Teslas. How many do you have now, Jason? 3?
Let's not talk about it. I mean, I'm going to run for mayor at mayorjason.com, and I got to be a man of the people.
Yep. So the Boosted Board's cool.
It's not helping, the 3 Teslas.
There's a handheld controller that's Bluetooth, and you can set this thing from 12 miles an hour up to 22 miles an hour for
this
about
is how,
6 miles.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is how rich developers in San Francisco wind up in the ER.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, this is how they break their elbows.
It does have brakes on it. The brakes are...
the brakes stop the board, but you go flying.
Yeah, you go flying, right. So there's this thing called inertia, and it's a long board with a relatively low center of gravity, you will die.
It is true. I met the founder. I passed on investing in this thing, but the way it works, the Boosted Board, is you have a hand controller that looks like those old RC controllers, like a radio controller, and that's how you pick your speed.
That's right.
And I am seeing more and more of them in the city. They have a battery pack underneath them, and it goes, 15 miles per hour?
Up to 22 on the new version. What's amazing about this...
Wait a second. 22 miles an hour.
It's scary, but it's so
fun. On a bicycle, how fast... If you're pedaling fast on level ground, how fast is a bicycle going? 15?
But your bikes have 26-inch wheels or 27-inch wheels.
And this thing has...
Has just like 2-inch wheels. So the big thing is with all the potholes around the city, and you watch Casey Neistat, one of the other YouTubers.
Yes.
He's going around New York without a helmet, dodging potholes and taxi cabs while filming.
Right.
So this is a message to Casey. Casey, you know I love you. You have great hair. I will not debate it. That guy's got great hair. You have great hair too.
Thank you.
Put a helmet on. I know you got great hair. Put a helmet on. I mean, if I had that hair, I probably wouldn't wear a helmet as well. But for safety, we don't want Casey to miss some episodes.
Right.
What is that thing? I mean, embarrass yourself even more. You're an adult with an electric skateboard. How much did you pay for this? Is this over $1,000?
Yeah, it's $1,500.
You pay. Yeah, and you paid $1,500 for a skateboard.
Yeah, well, a few years ago, I built a skateboard for my 43rd birthday. So I'm like, well, that's a couple, 3 years ago. I had to push it, and I wanted to get around the city in a new way. Because I quit riding Vespas. So
you stopped with the Vespas. Vespas are safe.
Yeah, I would rebuild Vespas, crashed, and bring them back to life.
Yeah.
And I wanted to try the skateboard. So, my favorite thing for learning and education is Easy Robot. And if you think about Arduino, Raspberry Pi, all these platforms, you can put sensors on them, you can make robots. But the website is easy-robot.com. And my buddy DJ made this product that is essentially the Uber... are you going to, I don't know what site that is. Easy.
No,
are you doing something else? Okay. So Easy Robot lets you do programming, logic, camera detection, machine learning, scripting.
Nice.
And for $200, there's DJ, for $200, you get this platform that everything's in the box and the servos won't burn out. If you would try and piece this together on your own, you'd have a hodgepodge of systems, and these guys have nailed it with education and STEM and STEAM.
Brian, what do you got? What do you play with these guys?
I have simple gadget needs. I mean, we have that Vive. We have, you know, I like my phone. We don't have a lot of stuff. The Apple TV, right?
No new apps. Nothing.
No software. It's a So apps.
Any business
absolutely.
Software? Anything specific?
No. I mean, I live in Slack. I gotta say, if I had to pick a technology, React Native. So you know, all for decades they've said you just program it in Java, it's gonna run everywhere, and it doesn't, right? React Native actually does that. So I'm having a lot of fun being a developer again after retiring from that, you know, years and years ago. So React Native.
Kevin Rose has a new fasting app that he has, which is called Zero. And it allows you to pick a fast, because people are saying, hey, fasting is probably how humans' biology worked originally. One of the reason we're all getting so goddamn fat is because we don't fast. And there's like three or four different types of fasting. One of them is circadian, which is, I think, means something about those bugs in the
bars.
Yeah,
you eat crickets.
Right? The crickets or something? No. Circadian means, I think, you go to bed.
It means circadian.
Circadian rhythms.
Circadian.
All right, whatever. I'm sorry. I didn't go to graduate school, Peter. But circadian.
We can't all
circadian,
go.
I don't know. Anyway, whatever this is, the
Yeah. Cubic.
Cubic zirconian. Right. The zirconian fasting is you when you go to bed, when the sunset goes down, you stop eating. And then when the sun comes up, you can eat again. And it's a simple app. It's free. He's not monetizing it yet. But it works really well. And there's another title. I didn't go to graduate school, Peter.
But that is why they call it breakfast, because you're breaking the fast.
Correct. Yeah, so. Thanks, Brian. And then he's doing another – he's doing another – one of the things like I just had Kevin on my podcast, and he's doing a app for
like a meditation
called Oak.
Yeah.
But if you type into Facebook groups, you do a search for Oak Meditation App, he's doing a group where you can watch him build the app and learn how much it costs. To your point, Brian, React Native is like building websites, but you can make one code base that works on Android, the web,
basically CSS and JavaScript, and then you get an Android
but
app.
But
an
it feels app snappy like an app.
It's really, really good. It's
is
close
Apple going
to
let you into the App Store with it, or are they going to be persnickety?
No. So we've already done it. I have friends that have done
it too. For Clip Episode, obviously.
Yeah. So you're in the App Store, but even better than that is it's a JavaScript bundle that runs the whole thing.
Right.
And you can circumvent the App Store. So not only
what do you
can
mean?
You well, what I mean is not only while you're developing can you see it faster in a simulator on your phone and stuff like that, which is way faster than doing, let's say, Xcode, Swift, and Xcode.
Yep.
But once you get into the App Store, you put a major version in there. You make a bunch of changes that aren't native code, you can push them all day long without Apple's approval because Apple's cool with it.
The diff changes.
So, right. So what happens is the app fires up and says, it's like checking a CDN. Is there a new JavaScript bundle? And you can set it for on wake or on first load or on sign in.
And they don't mind go. That.
No, it'll download. So that's how your news feed can go. All the avatars are on the left. Now they're all on the right. And you don't have to worry that the people two versions back are still seeing them on the left.
So does this Apple's original position on the App Store was that they don't want you making changes that they don't check? So correct. How does that change it? Does that mean the people doing React have an advantage now?
So I do. I think people with React do have an advantage because of this code push technology. But if you think about it, it's design changes. It's not fundamental. It doesn't change how the app works.
Okay.
Right? But it changes how it looks. So what's
which is kind of how the app works. So I kind of feel like you're splitting hairs. I don't want to get you in trouble. But
if you're pulling in a news feed, a web page, you can change that all day long.
Yeah,
think of it like that.
It's interesting because they wanted to have control over apps. And it's one of the reasons things work so smoothly on Apple. And on Android, you have all these copycat apps and chaos and security issues in the App Store.
Rogue.
But it shouldn't introduce any security issues or any malicious code issues.
No.
I think that's why they allow it.
And they're certainly tightening the noose a bit over at Apple with the App Store where like the incessant begging for reviews, which is so annoying.
Yeah.
There should be a global setting where I can say, do not ask me for reviews. I don't care about your review issue for your app.
If you ask, automatically, zero stars.
Yes. No, like Waze is like, I love Waze. Save so much time. Mm-hmm. But Waze is like, did you know that our rank is, if you will, you know, you can help spread the word. I'm like, I'm not here to spread the word about your app. I don't want to do the rating system. I don't care. All right, listen. This has been an amazing episode of This Week in Tech, if I do say so myself. Do I pick the actual name or are you guys going to pick the name? In the chat room, give us suggestions for names right now. And what's that?
End of the show.
At the end of the show, I'll do that. We'll wrap up now. I'll thank Peter Rojas. Peter, if people want to pitch you on an app and get your money as a venture capitalist, they should just call your mobile phone, which is 415. No. What is the best way?
I have a 212 cell number.
You're still rocking 212?
Yeah.
He's still using it.
Yeah. Wow. I'm thinking of getting my 718 number just to F with people.
Okay.
Just do Google Voice. I got a bunch. I have every code. I have Dallas, Austin,
I was looking
New York.
At premium numbers. I was thinking, like, maybe it'd be baller to have like, you know, whatever, 2125 or whatever, 415-555-1212 or something. Like have like,
yeah.
Or 1,000. You know what those cost?
Those are expensive. Aren't they?
Take a guess.
That's 80 grand.
No.
Not that much. No. I didn't say an 80 grand ones. It was $500 to about $10,000 was the range for, and I think the $10,000 ones were like the 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, like 456.
Well, there's a car service in New York, 666-666.
That one I don't know.
Carmel, yeah.
Right? They paid a lot of money for that.
Dial 7.
Wozniak has all these numbers. He's been collecting phone numbers for decades, and he can't use them because they're such easy numbers that when kids pick up the phone.
Right.
There used to be dial tone, by the way. There used to be this thing he would pick up.
Wozniak collects
phone numbers.
Premium phone numbers.
He's been doing
because
it.
He was a phone freak. He's a freaker back in the day. That's how he got started.
It's interesting you mentioned that. My first experience with computers, you remember this, Brian, when we were at Severian, was I got a war dialer. And Sprint used to allow you – Sprint had one phone number. You'd call the number. Then you would dial the number you wanted to dial. Then you would dial a five-digit – it would give you a different sounding dial tone. Then you would put in a five-digit code or six-digit code. And what the war dialer did on my IBM PC Junior with the Ventel 300-board modem is it would just guess numbers. And you'd wake up in the morning with five new numbers.
This is for bridges, for bridging?
To get a phone call. So then we started at our school calling.
We were driving for BBSs.
Well, we just got free phone numbers. We could get free usage of phones.
Yeah.
And the idea was then we could call the California
BBSs
for a dollar a minute, and we started doing that. And then at school, I started telling people I could do this, and we started using the phone at Severian to do it. But then I started getting paranoid that people were watching us or that there might be the FBI or CIA because I heard people got busted in Queens, and we stopped doing it.
A little bit like proxies, that sort of thing. Like people would do something today.
I see, okay.
You know,
okay.
I want to bounce off that.
It's just basically, think about how crazy this was. Sprint would allow you, you would get a code for in your office for Sprint, like if you were a traveling salesperson.
Yeah.
And they just say, use this six-digit code, dial Sprint, dial the six-digit code, then dial whatever phone number you want. Well, how it works.
That's how you used to do if you traveled a lot. That's how you did long. You went up to a payphone and
you did that.
You dialed their 800 number.
Yeah.
Then you dialed your six-digit code so you could guess them.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was nutty. I can't believe I didn't get caught. God,
you should be in jail right now.
I can talk about it.
I guess the statute of limitations.
Statute's got to be up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe CIA, maybe the FBI is waiting for us after this. Yeah. Gadget Guy Dave Matthews. Everybody check out New Air and follow GGDM.
That's it.
Follow GGDM on Twitter.
Twitter, Instagram.
Instagram.
All the fun services.
And listen, I'm going to go back to Burning Man this year.
Cool. I'll be there.
I ran into you at Burning Man.
Yeah, it was lovely.
You had a
Boeing 747 that we turned into one of the largest art pieces at Burning Man.
And when he says he had a Boeing 747, what I mean by that is he had cut the first half of a jet.
Yeah, we bought the whole plane, the Mojave, where this is, and it's at bigimagination.org if you want to check this out. We're raising funds right now because it's really expensive, it turns out, to bring a non-flying fuselage to the playa. And we've got benefactors that are coming in to help match.
But you did this one time. When you get the plane there, then you've outfitted it with LEDs.
Yep. 24,700 LEDs.
Here it is.
That I had.
Look
at
this.
A team. This is the 747, the Mojave. This is by Scaled Composites.
How old is that plane? From the 60s or something?
75. As we cut it apart.
So it's a decommissioned plane.
As we cut it apart here, we're cutting the wing off in this photo. That'll be first story views to look out amongst the playa. And when you're in the upper deck, that'll be ultimately a convertible from that bubble. And from that convertible, it'll be
this is the one I saw.
A three-story view. Yeah, you saw the first portion of the plane.
Yeah.
So this is a five-year
project.
I
was in the cockpit.
Yep. We had the Smile High Club in the cockpit. And the whole idea with this is we wanted to build the largest moving art piece that we could bring everyone together. Because Burning Man has what's called radical inclusion. Mm-hmm. Anyone can do anything. When we built art cars before, and a card that I did with some of my crew was Charlie the Art Car, which made its way to a Quiznos commercial that you might have seen making fun of Burning Man. We had to push people away, and we thought with the airplane we could have a fuselage that could
fit a lot of people.
As many people, yeah.
And there were a good number of people inside of it.
So every year we're bringing back more of the plane. So we'll have the full plane there in four years.
So what's it like to be able to have millions of dollars that you can put into a pile of money, and then just burn?
Yeah.
I mean, who underwrites the buying of a plane? How much did this cost? Be honest.
So it's a multi-million dollar project, but we have benefactors and investors behind it. I'm labor, so I give away my...
Okay, so it's not your movie.
Not
your money.
Not my money.
But let's just...
I do donate.
Suffice it to say, some billionaire...
I donate.
Thought that this would be cool and gave you guys millions of dollars.
No.
A single one
We beg, borrow, plead. We raised $79,000 on Indiegogo last year to help fund the moving of it.
Got it.
The plane is stolen. That's what he's...
All right, I got it.
The plane we bought for aluminum value because no engines are on the plane.
Got
right?
it. Okay.
So you get it. It's like a Hollywood plane. It was what they might shoot a set
Where's
in.
The plane now?
So we bring it to Gerlach, which is the community outside of Burning Man, and it sits there. So we have to do rolling road closures because it blocks three lanes of traffic.
Well, given all the serious problems we have in society, I'm glad that you're putting the...
It's a nonprofit. We're doing this to show people...
I'm breaking chops. Art has a specific value. Art has a value in the world. I just don't think it's a couple million dollars, but okay. I'm, you know, like, listen, there's some guy who wrapped a huge building in orange cloth.
Yeah, sure. The gates in New York, right?
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool, too. It's art. Hey, listen, who am I to criticize it? I'm going to criticize it, but...
But I curate the art program on the plane. So if you're an artist and you want to put your works inside of the space, we have a digital interactive space with the latest technology in the dustiest environment in the world. So we can...
It's crazy. All right. And Brian Alvey, thanks again for coming. You follow Brian Alvey at Brian Alvey on the Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And blocked by Trump yet or no?
No.
I got blocked by Eric Trump this week.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Yeah. I'm working on the trifecta. Ivanka still following and Donald Trump Jr. still following. But I'll get them. I'll get there. I've been working on just posting all the pictures of them killing like big cats and elephants and, you know, murdering like endangered species and whatever else these maniacs are doing. That got me one ban. So I'll get a couple more. And of course, Clipisode.
Yes.
Is in the App Store or can they sign up on the website to get an email?
Two more weeks of beta. Yeah.
I got it. Okay. Clipisode. So look for Clipisode, CLIPISODE.
.co.
I'm Jason Calacanis and I have a book, angelthebook.com. Just type Calacanis Angel into Amazon. I read the audiobook. If you're into Audible, go ahead and download it and write a great review. If you don't like it, email Brian at Clipisode, and you know he's responsible. If you do like it, please write a 5-star review so I can write another book. but it's been great to be here. Thanks again to Leo for trusting me with the desk. I promise we'll
Push the button down.
We'll figure out how we're going to pay for this motor that we burned out. But we'll take a collection on GoFundMe. Or you can start a collection on GoFundMe right now and take the money if you like, apparently. And I'm going to start a GoFundMe right now for an art car. I'm going to start a GoFundMe for $1 million to not bring a plane to the Playa. And then I'll just collect $1 million.
That's good.
We'll see you all next week on This Week in Tech.
This is amazing.
Bye-bye.